Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right. Happy Monday. Welcome to the program. Hope everyone had a good weekend. You've got Pat, Will, and Logo with you for the next 4 hours. Full-on show today because we've got game four between Montreal and Winnipeg at 6 o'clock. Long weekend for you, Will. Was it good?
Yeah, it was fine. It wasn't super long. I was doing things on Thursday and Friday that required me to take the days off. I wasn't doing it for pleasure. It was good. Weather was nice, which helped.
Yeah, until Saturday when then all of a sudden it wasn't. But yeah, good Friday night, and hope everyone had a good weekend, and welcome to the next 4 hours of your life. As I mentioned, we've got Montreal and Winnipeg at 6 o'clock tonight with the Jets trailing 3-0. Montreal a win away from advancing to the Final Four in the NHL. I am floored this series has gone the way it has. I am stunned this postseason has gone the way it has in the North Division, because I'll be perfectly honest, gentlemen. I gave Montreal next to no respect heading into this playoffs, and I mean, obviously was straight up wrong. The way they limped into the playoffs, the way they played down the stretch, they were 7-11-2 in their final 20 games, and even knowing they were getting some key players back from injury, and that obviously played a big part in their 7-11-2 run. I thought they were going to get rolled by Toronto. I barely gave them a sniff against the Maple Leafs. I thought they were still going to get rolled by Winnipeg in this round. And even when Mark Scheifele got suspended for 4 games ahead of game 2, still thought the Jets were going to win this series even without Scheifele. Well, I think it's time to admit a little wrong, because, well, I focused so much on how the Leafs lost that first round series, and a lot of the time to these first 3 games in this round, I focused on what the Jets have done to lose 3 games. I think it's time to talk about what Montreal has done. They have game planned perfectly for 2 straight series. They've executed, and they're a win away from going to the Final Four. I did not see it coming in any way, shape, or form. This has absolutely floored me, but I'm happy to be wrong, and I'm happy to give credit where it's due, because Habs absolutely deserve to be a win away from the Final Four.
Yeah, they've been really good, and I think you ask about the Toronto series. Well, nobody gave them a chance, and quite frankly, I'm not sure the Habs gave themselves a chance until they got a bit of life there. And thank you to their former teammate Alex Galchenyuk with a bad turnover that turns into a Nick Suzuki OT winner. And the Montreal Canadiens have now got 6 straight wins. They have not trailed for a single second in any of those 6 games. And I think you nailed it. The game plan has been perfect. The execution has been even better. And they're a group that right now, doing the easiest thing in playoffs, obviously, but it's making life so hard on their opponents. They are playing heavy, hard hockey, and they're playing with the lead. And when you're trying to chase games and you're doing it against a team who's in your face and physical, it makes it that much more difficult. And I will say that I truly believe a Mark Scheifele hit has completely turned this series. This is a team that's playing for a Jake Evans. And, you know, yes, it's only one player. But I think a hit like that just greatly affects both sides. And you've got one team rallying with it, and the other team, you know, kind of reeling because they don't know what has just happened. So frustration is getting the best of the Winnipeg Jets. But, yeah, take nothing away from Montreal. They have done a phenomenal job. And for all the talk coming in, you mentioned them limping into the playoffs. Well, I'd say right now Dominic Ducharme has got the head coach job in Montreal.
Yeah, it would be regardless of what happens against Colorado or Vegas, it'd be hard for Marc Bergevin or whoever the GM is, and I think we assume it'll be Bergevin next year too. It'd be hard for him not to give the full-time job to Dominic Ducharme. And I was extremely critical of Ducharme as that team went down the stretch. Those final 2 months, they were like a 500 team at best. And going back to when they canned Claude Julien early in the season, and Ducharme gave very little indications to me that this guy was the guy to get the Habs on track, the guy to lead them and guide them to playoff success. Well, here they are. They've had more than enough playoff success under Dominique Ducharme, regardless, again, of what happens in round number two. And that's so I tip my hat there, because didn't see that coming either. And, you know, this could have been a different conversation if we were talking about Carey Price and this just being on the back of an incredible and world-class goaltender. And Carey Price has been world-class, don't get me wrong. But, Will, as you pointed out after Game 7 against Toronto, remember we played that call from the Toronto radio crew, and they were talking about how Price stole the series. Wait, no, Price didn't steal this. I don't feel like this has at any point been Carey Price putting his team on his back and single-handedly leading them to a win. Like, he's been great. He's been a number one goalie. He's been everything they need him to be, but it goes well beyond just Price and what he's done. That would be a really lazy narrative to me to say that this is just what they've done between the pipes.
Yeah, I think it's helped. There's no question about it, especially as I talk about when you're protecting leads and you're playing in front. When you've got a goaltender like that, yeah, it plays a huge role. But no, I think the entire group in front of them has done a terrific job. And he's been part of the story, but he's not been all of the story for me.
Yeah, good way of putting it. We're underway on the big show this afternoon. Logan Gordon, Pat Steinberg, Will Nault along with you in the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. And for a team that we all said was deep at forward, they lose one player and it seems like it's curtains. And I could kind of understand it in August of last year, Will, when Scheifele goes down, just the ridiculously bad luck play with him and Tkachuk, and you see Scheifele writhing and all that. Like that was a shock to the system, and they weren't anywhere near as deep at forward in the bubble last year as they are this year. Well, this year, they had Dubois, and that helped them down the middle. They go out and they get Paul Stastny ahead of the season as well, and I know that he missed Game 1 and Game 2, what was back for Game 3 last night, but to lose Scheifele, and for this team that we all have talked about all year long, at least I have, that this is one of the deepest forward groups in the NHL, you lose one player, and now all of a sudden Connor and Wheeler and Dubois and Stastny and Kopp and this group of seemingly deep forwards, they look lost. I'll take Ehlers out of that group because he's still been very dangerous to me in this series, but I guess it shows you how much Scheifele means, but if I'm a Jets fan and my big calling card as a Jets fan was how deep my group is at forward, you lose one guy, and I know how important that guy is. I'm not naive to that, but to lose one guy and for it to make this much of a drastic difference, that does not look good on this Jets team at all.
Yeah, I mean, they lost DeMello too, right? And that the defensive core has been shaken up a little bit. I'd also say that just to push back a little bit, Dubois has been awful.
Oh, absolutely he has.
He's not been anywhere close to what I think the Jets expected. They just haven't been playing well, and they've got 2 5-on-5 goals this entire series. It's only been 3 games, but their offense is completely dried up. They look like a shell of what they were against the Edmonton Oilers. And I think part of that too, just like I had mentioned, I think the Scheifele hit just kind of completely changed everything. And it's a team that, you know, when something gets going against you, we talk about that all the time, the snowball effect, it's hard to turn that back around. When you go through a sweep where everything went your way, and now you're going through a series where things aren't going your way and you're having to play some really hard hockey, that's incredibly frustrating. And obviously they're pros. They should be able to fight through that, but very much easier said than done. And I think that's a huge factor in this series is that, you know, we've seen it all the time. Maybe not all the time, but you do see it if a team completes a sweep and then, you know, they have trouble getting it back if things go the other way in the next series. And, that's what's kind of happening right now for Winnipeg. And, I just think, you know, you can't take anything away from Montreal. They've just done a phenomenal job, and it's pretty much just too easy for me to say that they've lost their way because they've lost Scheifele and DeMello. They look like they can't defend, which is a complete polar opposite of what it was against the Oilers. And yeah, their forwards look lost, and I'm with you. I'm just, you know, floored at this point, because what else can you say? Montreal has done everything perfect, and Winnipeg has done nothing.
And I also wondered to that point, in that series against Edmonton in four games, the Jets led for a grand total of 19 minutes and 52 seconds. They won three games in overtime. And I wonder if, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but I wonder if I bit too hard on how good the Jets are defensively and how strong this group is. Look what they just did to McDavid and co. In a lot of ways, they needed a lot of things to go right. It was one of those sweeps where, yeah, they won the three straight in overtime, and good on them. They deserve to win the series. I'm not trying to take that away from them, but maybe that made them look a little bit more formidable than they really were, because you go take a look at what, it's not like they played a lot from ahead in that series either. And what was the stat that you just threw out there about how long have they played ahead in this series against Montreal?
Every minute, every second. I mean, outside of the 0-0 tie.
Yeah.
Yeah, six straight games. Game 5, 6, and 7 against the Leafs, and game 1, 2, 3 against the Winnipeg Jets. The Montreal Canadiens have not trailed for a single second.
Like, that is So Winnipeg...
It's really... Hey, it's easy to play downhill, and credit to them, because they've been earning those leads. But, yeah, it's easy to play downhill, and that's what they've been doing. And when you play the stifling defensive hockey they play, and you're always up... As an opponent, that's incredibly frustrating, and you know I think that's kind of where Winnipeg's at right now. They're just squeezing it tight, and they don't know what's happened. They're kind of wondering. They're like us. They're floored. They can't believe this has happened in front of their own eyes.
Yeah. So a Winnipeg team that,
and also
barely...
Connor Hellebuyck could maybe mix in a save one or two, but
well, he's definitely being out goaltended. There's no doubt about that. And again, that's not to suggest that price is the only reason why Montreal is where we are. Will just laid it out really well for you a couple minutes ago why Montreal deserves to be where they are. Goaltending's been a part of it and part of the solution, but has not been the leading factor. Winnipeg barely led against Edmonton, and now they have not led once. So they've now played seven games and have led for less than 20 minutes total, which maybe gives you a little bit of an idea as to maybe we did overvalue them coming out of the Edmonton series. And did anybody see the Scheifele hit coming? Maybe not. Did you have, by the way, you weren't here on Friday when we were reacting to the four-game suspension. What was your reaction to Scheifele getting four games for that hit on Evans in game one?
I think he got it light. I think he got off with the first-time offender. It was a disgusting hit. It was gutless play. It was a very clear intent to injure. I have no time for the crowd that says, you know, he should have taken the puck in the corner or should have taken a look to see if Scheifele was coming. Yeah, it was a gross hit. It was a garbage hit. And quite frankly, I don't know how anyone can defend it. It was a predatory, gutless play by Mark Scheifele.
That was essentially where we were on Friday after the play. Well, Thursday and Friday. Well, I thought he was, just based on Department of Player Safety and precedents and all that type of stuff, I was like, well, he probably gets two. I was surprised at four. I had no problem at four. I thought it was the right suspension. And I thought more than anything else, for one of the smartest guys, one of the smartest hockey players on the planet, both when it comes to his on-ice IQ and how much he knows about the game, nobody watches more hockey than Mark Scheifele does when he's not playing. For a guy to be that smart and then put himself in that situation to be so dumb, that has been the biggest shocker to me. And now look what he's done and look how he's hurt his team. Just it really does blow my mind how dumb that play was.
Talking about this, I don't even know when it was. I don't even know if it was in relation to the Tkachuk-Cassian thing, but I had mentioned to you that, you know, the crowd playing a factor and all that. This is obviously not related to that, but just in terms of what you're talking about and how smart he is, it just shows you that, you know, guys can see red, and that was just a pure frustration play. And you ask Mark Scheifele, and he'd like to take it all back. But yeah, it was a guy to me that just saw pure red and, kind of lost his way at the point. And hey, we're all human. We've all made dumb decisions, whether it's under the influence of perhaps some alcohol. But, in this case, it's kind of the same thing. It's just a bad decision in a situation where nothing kind of went your way. You had a bit of a comeback and couldn't complete it all the way. And, he just kind of thought, I'm going to hit this guy no matter what. And it was a bad decision. And I'm sure he would like to take it back if he could.
Dave says, stop embarrassing yourselves. It was a clean hit. Yeah, we're clearly embarrassing ourselves. Good call, Dave. Couple of texts on this series so far. This from Bob. The best outcome from the Canadian division should have been a spirited battle of Alberta. Instead, we get Montreal putting on a display that rivals the drying of paint. What a terrible Canadian champion. Disgraceful for Canada. Okay, not a Habs fan.
Sorry, Cowtown Bob. I would think the Battle of Alberta would have been a more disgrace than this. I'm sorry.
The Leafs, no, I don't want to read that one. That one's dumb. I'm going to read another one.
No, that one's just making fun of me because said the Leafs were a juggernaut.
It's dumb to say. Yeah. Here's the text I was going to read. Same idea, but it's aimed
at Holden. Because I knew their captain was going to get hurt. And, you know, I knew that they were going to lose down. Did anyone think they were going to win, up 3-1? Everyone thought they were going to win that series. So. Yeah, very convenient. I just love the cherry picking. It's
great. We're allowed to be wrong. We talk for 40 hours.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, 15 of 15 on the Sportsnet panel picked Toronto to win.
They're all dumb too, Will.
Everybody picked Toronto. So yeah, it's nice to be. Oh, look at you guys. You guys are wrong.
This text is what I was getting at. Would it be safe to say, well, you guys talk hockey all day, you don't know anything about it? Had the Flames pegged to be easy playoff contenders and had the Habs falling flat even prior to the postseason, what's your next beautiful prediction, fellas? You know what? What is so beautiful about this format is we talk about it, we give our observations, we have our conversations, we have our debates, and then when we're wrong, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to be surprised. So, If that's what get your jollies off of is Will and I or Boomer and Pinder being wrong, then all the power to you. We'll keep on giving our observations. We'll keep on loving being wrong because you know what? Being wrong is kind of fun in this industry. This reads, Bergevin is out, GM the field. Weber traded, big win. Edmonton, Anderson adds, and any team could have claimed Perry off waivers. That from Colin. And this on the other side, Montreal beat two teams missing their top two centers and top four defense and benefited from some very questionable officiating and player safety as well as lucky bounces. They'll get creamed next series. Hey, you know what? Them being beat handily by Vegas and Colorado, which we'll get to in just a second, doesn't change what they've been able to do in the North Division. I'm still very impressed by what Montreal has been able to do so far. Let's get to that other series, the winner of Montreal-Winnipeg. We all expect that to be Montreal with Game 4 tonight. We'll take on the winner of Vegas and Colorado. And the Vegas Golden Knights have turned that series around in a significant way. And for the first time, Will, at least from this vantage point, Colorado looks a little vulnerable. And they're now the team that is looking for a response. After losing 7-1 in Game 1, Golden Knights have taken this thing right over. They probably should have won Game 2. They lose in overtime. They've now won Game 3 and Game 4. Game 3 in pretty gutsy fashion. And since the loss in Game 1, Vegas is almost at 61% possession at 5-on-5. The shot attempts are 181-117 in favor of the Golden Knights since Game 1. High danger chances at natural stat trick at 5-on-5, 41-17 in favor of the Vegas Golden Knights. So Colorado was rolling. They get through the first round. They win the first two games of round two. And now they've run into a damn good opponent that has figured it out themselves. And, Will, I think the Avalanche have what it takes to respond. I really do. They're that good. But I'm curious to see if they do indeed respond to a Vegas team that has pushed back really, really well.
Yeah, I think this has been kind of like what I just talked about with Winnipeg on the Avalanche side, especially when you talk about their top forwards. McKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen, and that line, you know, for the longest time, even going back to the final, 30 games of the regular season, they were playing, you know, unstoppable hockey. Everything was going their way. Every puck was going in. Reminded me kind of, you know, the 18-19 first half edition of the Flames top line. Everything was going in for them. And now they have faced essentially 8 periods. I would say the first period in Game 2 was probably the Avalanche's best. And since then, it's been 8 periods of really good hockey from the Golden Knights. And even the extra periods have certainly gone their way. And I think that the Avalanche players, and you saw it last night with that huge McKinnon hit on McNabb, they're just frustrated. They haven't had, you know, things being this difficult or haven't had things been this difficult for quite some time. And, you know, they've got to find a way to fight through it. It's up to them to be better. And Until that happens, yeah, I think the Golden Knights will continue taking this series over. And we talk about how MacKinnon can take over games and, you know, take over situations. Well, he hasn't been able to do that. And, you know, much like we just talked about with Montreal, give credit to Vegas. They've done a terrific job making adjustments and, you know, getting away from what happened in game one. And, you know, some of that was, you know, coming off a game seven against Minnesota, then playing in Denver at the Mile High Air. So, you know, all those factors play in. But yeah, the other thing too, it's the Avalanche, you know, when things aren't going your way and then you're playing in a hostile environment like Vegas has, it has not been easy for them. And going back home, hopefully, is something that is going to help them out. They've now got control of the matchups again. And, you know, if you're Jared Bednar, you've got to find a way to get that top line going, because if they don't get going, well, this might be over in six, and it might be the Vegas Golden Knights walking away with it. So, you know, at the end of the day, as we talked about when the series began, Pat, we talked about, you know, the Avalanche and who's going to beat them. Well, I think everybody wanted this series to go seven, probably expected it to go seven. So we shouldn't be surprised it's 2-2, but there's no question the Avalanche are going to have to make some adjustments going back home here for game five.
Well, and while their top line has, you know, they've still been very dangerous on the power play, but their top line has been stifled a little bit at 5-on-5. Well, I guess you could say there's two top lines in Vegas. Probably the Stone line is their top line, but their former top line with Marchessault, Carlson, and Riley Smith, that group needed to get going, and it has got going. Marchessault with four massive goals in the last two games on home ice, and that line has really figured it out after it was Smith who took the penalty, soft as it was, in overtime in game two. And that's what's maybe the most impressive, and that's the mark of this Vegas team, to give them some credit on top of the credit you just gave them, Will, because this Vegas group has been to a Stanley Cup final. They've been to a recent Western Conference final less than a year ago. They've never missed the playoffs in their history. And they seem like a pretty battle-hardened group. They've gone through playoff upsets. They've gone through playoff disappointments. And here they are. Like a lot of
the Avalanche, though. Like, think about the Avalanche last four years.
For sure.
Like, they've done pretty much the same thing Vegas has, except they don't have the Stanley Cup final appearance.
And for sure.
So, yeah.
The point I was trying to make, though, is that I think a lot of other teams, and that's why I'm confident that Colorado is going to be able to respond. But the point I was trying to make is that, you know, a lot of teams, like say that was the Flames that was in the playoffs and game two went the way it did. They played well, but they lost in overtime. Well, I think that in some years would just completely crush the Flames and they wouldn't have it in them to bounce back. Well, I give Vegas a lot of credit, because that would have been extremely frustrating. You should have won. You're the better team, but you lose in overtime on a brutal penalty call, and then they bounce back and do what they did in game three and game four. That's more the point I was trying to make, is that I just tip my hat in terms of the way they were able to respond, because I don't know how many teams in this league would be able to do that. Vegas is one of them for me.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that was the first time they've been down 2-0 in a series in franchise history. So good credit there, too.
Good on them. All right.
I hate Vegas.
How come?
Well, I hate it. Like, they came in the league and they've been nothing but successful. And there was even more pieces I saw over the weekend. Thomas Drance was one of them who put it out there. Like, I just can't believe how stupid other teams were. Like, just absolutely stupid. The trade that Winnipeg made so that they would take Chris Thorburn, and now Nick Suzuki is the property, you know, was obviously traded. The pick that was used on Suzuki was traded to Vegas so that they would take Chris Thorburn and not Marco Dano and somebody else. I think it was Tobias Enstrom. And Enstrom played one more season. Dano never made the NHL, so good on you for trading a first-round pick for that garbage. And then Max Pacioretty gets traded there, and that first-round pick is then traded to Montreal, and it's been used on Nick Suzuki. So in a weird, twisted way, Winnipeg's being burned by a guy they probably could have had on their team. So, yeah, I guess in closing, Pat, you know, credit to the Vegas Golden Knights for what they've done. I just hope teams aren't that stupid this time around. Like, just let Seattle take a player. Stop trading assets so that you can protect a freaking Marco Dano. Like, are you kidding me?
The way McKinnon and McPhee leveraged their spot and held teams up against the barn 4 years ago.
Other teams were stupid, though.
Well, exactly. But the way that they were able to do that and dupe a bunch of teams. You just gave the Winnipeg example. They got pretty good return out of Minnesota, although that one's a little bit more understandable. The Florida one is completely, you cannot defend what Dale Tallon and the Florida Panthers did. That was just absolute buffoonery. And there's probably two or three other examples of what Vegas did in that regard. Well, it sure has made it tough for Seattle to do the same thing, because I think you're right. Teams are going to absolutely learn from the mistakes of 4 years ago when they get to the expansion draft next month. That's coming up in just a few weeks as well. Okay, we have partnered up with our friends at Paradise Bay once again to celebrate the start of summer. Sportsnet 960 The Fan introduces Here Comes the Summer. So listen weekdays for famous calls during commercial breaks. If you know the famous call, whether it's a Flames, NHL, we've got some other sports in there as well. For the next 2 weeks, be listening in during commercials. Text in the teams, the year, and your name to 960-960 when you hear it. If you get the answer right, you'll be entered into the draw, and then on June 21st, one listener going to be randomly selected to win one of the following items from our friends at Paradise Bay: a Treasure Garden cantilever umbrella, an Enclover propane natural gas fire pit, or a Sabre gas grill. One of three prizes for you. All you got to do is listen and be right when you text in at 960-960. Full contest details at sportsnet.ca/960. And it's all brought to you by our friends at Paradise Bay. For all your hot tub and patio needs, come see them at goparadisebay.com. Headed back to Montreal up next. We've got a Game 4 preview around the corner on the Big Show. We're underway on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to the Big Show. Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Game 4, Montreal and Winnipeg at 6 o'clock. Numbers are hard. 6 o'clock face-off right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Habs up 3-0 on the Winnipeg Jets entering Game 4 tonight, coast-to-coast on Sportsnet and CBC, and right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. As part of that coast-to-coast telecast on your television will be Sportsnet's Kyle Bukauskas, who joins us on the program this afternoon. A proud Sate alumni member, Kyle Bukauskas, as well. Kyle, it's 2 versus 2. You got me and you from Sate, and Will and Logan are Mount Royal guys. So I'm happy to have you with us. Have you with us. I feel less outnumbered today.
Yes, got to balance it out, Pat. Go Trojans. Good to be on with you guys.
How we doing? Tell us about a couple of games in Montreal, at least one more to come tonight, with 2,500 fans at the Bell Centre.
It's been a lot of fun. Like, it's just so, you know, the term I've been using, it's like, you know, ecstasy for the years, just hearing the atmosphere again. And, you know, where else are you going to find a louder 2,500 anywhere else than at the Bell Centre in Montreal, right? So you look around the crowd, clearly there's still a lot of open seats, and just with the way the health guidelines are here right now, they're not at a position yet to increase capacity, though indoor dining has resumed in the province of Quebec today. But it's just been so awesome just to feel something as you're walking over to the rink in the afternoon, and people are out already. They've got kind of a patio set up outside the Bell Centre, and for those that would have watched games on the TV there last night, you'd see the cameras cut to the shots outside of fans reacting there. We're in the middle of a heat wave here in Montreal as well, so it's nice and hot too. All of it just feels like spring, summer, playoff hockey time, right? So it's just a feeling that we've all been longing for, and feel very fortunate to kind of be in the thick of it here in Montreal again.
So indoor dining is back. What is Ziggy's on Crescent Street going to be like tonight if indoor dining is back?
Yeah, when I was here earlier in the season, I went for a walk along Crescent Street just to have a peek with what's been going on there when things were still closed. So I can't even begin to imagine what that scene is going to look like, especially if they win here tonight and wrap things up. I know as well as you, that's a great post game spot when it's safe to do so.
Yeah, no doubt. What is the buzz like in Montreal right now?
Well, it's amazing how things have changed, right? I left here after doing the back-to-back games, 3 and 4 against Toronto in round one, and calls for getting rid of Bergevin, and Ducharme isn't our guy, and trade Price, and tear it all down as it typically goes in a market as hot as this one. But you're in a position now where there's a real belief and just a sense of renewed confidence in the group that, you know, showed glimpses of it early on in the year and went through some real, real trying circumstances and some difficult changes along the way this season. But the way this team is humming along right now and, you know, playing with the lead as often as they have and continuing to win games in the fashion that they are doing here since turning things around against the Maple Leafs in the opening round, there's just a real sense of excitement. And really, they're just the confidence that permeates from a guy like Carey Price, the star player in this market as he's been for so long now, and the way that he plays, you can just tell it is infectious for the players, it's infectious for the fan base and everybody tuning in. You know, you just watch how he's going about things and how well the team is playing in front of him. As a fan, you can just tell there's an excitement that I don't think that they were expecting to be feeling here 2 weeks ago. It's been a complete turnaround, and the city is abuzz with some really good vibes because of it.
At any point, did you see these six straight wins coming and them being a win away from the Final Four?
Well, maybe after game two of this round, maybe you started to sense it. Like, because yeah. Other than that, like, right, you, after game four, they had, against Toronto, they had four goals scored total, right? And that was the story. Once again, Price is brilliant, but he doesn't get any run support. And then he started to get it in, you know, a couple of improbable ways, right? Letting a three-goal lead slip away in game five, two and six, and win both in overtime. And then game seven, they just took it to a timid Toronto team. And they just kept rolling. You know, you go through a coaching change, and Brendan Gallagher talked about this last night. I mean, it wasn't just a couple of tinkers here and there that Dominic Ducharme wanted to implement when he came in after Claude Julien was relieved. You know, there was some massive changes to their system and their structure that he wanted to implement. And they were also going through a stretch where they were playing every other day because they had the 1 week COVID break and the schedule was condensed as is. So really hadn't even factor that in, some additions at the trade deadline, all of that all encompassing, and then you get the week off at the end of the regular season before the playoffs began for them, and I thought that was a huge benefit for Montreal more than any other team in the North, as we were all waiting for those two opening round series to get going here in Canada, because they actually had some time to practice and to go over the things, the styles and the different situational adjustments that Ducharme has been trying to implement since he took over earlier in the season. It didn't happen right away against the Maple Leafs, but we're seeing the byproduct of it now. And the biggest thing is, again, like they're playing with the lead. They don't have to chase the game here. You go look at the ice times after game three there last night of the forwards. Philippe Deneau led the way. He was under 18 minutes. They are completely playing just a total four-line game right now, and they can because they don't have a deficit to chase on the scoreboard. They score the first one, and they can settle into that, clog it up, siphon it off type structure that is just giving the Winnipeg Jets fits right now, and it's just continuing to roll for them. And with Price playing the way he is, you know, as again Gallagher said after the Toronto series, we just get the one goal and you feel like that's going to be enough with him in net. So all those things are contributing to what we're seeing now. It just took a really long time for it all to settle in.
Kyle Bukauskas of Sportsnet. He's our guest here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. The Fan tonight, it's game four of the Habs and Montreal live right here on Sportsnet 960 and, of course, Sportsnet and CBC on television with a 6 o'clock start. Kyle, kind of a two-parter, I guess. The first part is, any update on Jeff Petrie? The second part is, if you're the Montreal Canadiens up 3-0 in this series, we all know the cliche, the fourth game is the hardest to win. But I'm curious, would you entertain the thought of resting Jeff Petrie tonight on a back-to-back?
Yeah, I think ultimately it depends on how he's feeling, right? And I guess the fact that Ducharme said that he's going to be a game-time decision and perhaps that opens the opportunity that he at least takes warm-ups here tonight, then that could be a good indicator that maybe he does play. But I don't believe you're going to be playing, or this team's going to be playing with fire anyway in that sense, because you see on how heavily they rely on their top four, and Jeff Petrie absolutely has been a huge part of that here through these playoffs so far. So, you know, we all saw the replay there of him looking like he jammed his right hand there in the camera hole on the glass last night and couldn't continue at a certain point there late in the second period. But if they're able to get it to a point where, you know, he can squeeze a stick and still, you know, make plays, take passes, all of that stuff, I think he's going to play because, you know, certainly you can put in a guy like Xavier Ouellette or, you know, even an unproven playoff guy in Alexander Romanov, which, you know, fans here have been clamoring for ever since the playoffs began. And maybe you're still able to make it work. But I just think he's been so important to their success defensively here so far this postseason. I mean, if there's any chance that he's saying, yeah, I can get through another game here, I think you got to put him in.
How much do you think this series turned on the Mark Scheifele hit?
Big time. Don't you? I mean,
yeah, 100%.
Certainly it was unfortunate that the DeMelo injury happened that same night, but I just think you've got a team here now that's without their top center, one of their top offensive guys, as we saw in the Edmonton series and the sweeping of them. I totally think that's a huge change. I mean, he's here with the team on the trip, but the fact that you've got him sitting up in the stands, and again, it was a play, and we've heard him explain his side of the things, and I understand all that and have a great deal of respect for him as a player and a person, but you know, ultimately it was a play there where the game was done. It was Montreal's there to win there in game one, and you know, took advantage of a vulnerable player and got four games because of it. So you're sitting there now. I can't imagine what's going through his head here, where you're going to the rink tonight and you're wondering if, you know, the rest of the group can manage to grind out a win and at least get you one step closer to getting back into the series for a potential game six. But for a Winnipeg team that, again, you can tell is a little low on confidence right now, that is struggling to find, you know, the recipe for getting to the net and creating more traffic on Carey and just getting a lead for the first time this series, it seems like a really big mountain for them to climb, at least here right now, just to get to a game six. And you've got somebody like Mark Scheifele as an option again in your lineup.
With Scheifele down, I don't want to put too much on one guy, but, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois wanted a bigger stage. He's certainly on a bigger stage now in that trade out of Columbus, and he has not really lived up to his billing, I don't think, with the Jets. And as you say, I think you lose Scheifele and maybe your whole lineup kind of gets thrown into a blender and a little bit out of whack. But is there more asked here from Dubois? What can Winnipeg do to get back in this series, or at least go back to Winnipeg for a game five?
Yeah, I thought the last two games, and you know, Craig Simpson made a point of it too, games two and three, that was the best opportunity that Dubois had just to grab hold of him moving up the lineup and just asserting himself into the series and being the kind of player that, you know, certainly was attracted to Winnipeg when they made the deal to get him here in the first place. And it just hasn't happened. And to the point where he was dropped down to the second line midway through the game last night. And Paul Stastny, who was playing his first of the series after dealing with some unknown injury, he was moved up there to center Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor. And who knows if they end up starting that way here again tonight, but you can tell he had his chance and they got to the point where Paul Maurice is going, well, I've got nothing going offensively. I've got to do something. And he was the one who dropped down. So I certainly think it's disappointing in that sense for him. And, you know, I don't know if you guys caught Elliot Friedman, the intermission, when he said over the weekend, spoke to a member of the Blue Jackets player who wondered, you know, is he dealing with an injury? And of course, we won't know that until the season is eventually over for Winnipeg, whenever that time does come. But we do know he has dealt with it at a couple of times this season here. So that kind of goes into the equation too. And you wonder if he's 100%, but as you know, everyone's usually dealing with something here come postseason time. So it's been a disappointment for him, you know, for the whole team in general and being in the situation that they're at. But as I said earlier, for them, if they're to force a game five, like they've got to find a way to, I think, get a lead and at least force Montreal to start taking a little bit of chances here and maybe switch things up instead of just the cruise control roll four lines type of style that they've been playing here so far this series. You know, you got to get them out of their comfort zone, and they just haven't been able to do that yet.
In conversation with Sportsnet's Kyle Bukauskas, he will be on the nationwide telecast 6 o'clock tonight for game four, Montreal and Winnipeg, as the Habs try to punch their ticket to the final four. Two final ones for you. First of all, on Carey Price, who, you know, had not a horrible season, but by Price standards, those numbers are below what we're used to. But once again, much like in the bubble last year and now again in the postseason, when games are on the line, when they mean the most, Carey Price remains an elite world-class goaltender. I would imagine after covering this guy as long as you have, Kyle, that you know what this guy does in big games doesn't surprise you anymore.
No, but it doesn't make it any less amazing, though, right? Just to watch. And I mentioned the calmness, and it's just like the amount of times he makes a save, and it's just kind of the shrug afterwards. It's just, I can't imagine what that's like as an opposing shooter to see that, where you're battling like heck in front of the net, you're getting cross-checked, you're taking stick whacks, you're trying to get in position, and then you finally get a good shot off, and then he just swallows it up and doesn't even look at you and flips the puck to the linesman, and you're going, well, what the heck do I do now? And that's been the story, really, for him in these moments, and we're seeing again in these playoffs. And, you know, I mentioned the comments. We showed, so when Kotkaniemi scored the overtime winner in Game 6 against Toronto, right, first game in Montreal with fans again, the place was going nuts. They enforced a Game 7, which nobody could have foreseen coming a few days previous to that. And we showed the reaction of Price to that goal. He simply turned around and grabbed his water bottle, like as if it was the end of another practice. There was no reaction from him at all. The place, everyone around him is going nuts. And he just turned around, grabbed his water bottle and thought, okay, on to the next one. It's amazing just the mindset that he puts himself into and how calm that he looks when the moments get bigger and the pressure seems to just get more intense. We've seen it internationally. We've seen it other times in the playoffs, but you know, as I said, as early on he was brilliant against Toronto, he just wasn't getting the run supports, and now he's finally getting some goals to work with. And I mean, you can look at the numbers. Anytime he gets three goals of support in the postseason, it's pretty much game over here. So it's just been a fascinating part of all of this. And as good as the team is playing in front of him, you cannot understate just how brilliant he's played here, and once again showing why. Those NHLPA polls every year, one goalie, one game to win it all, who are you going with? And for the last few, it continues to be Carey Price.
It's funny you mentioned his lack of a pulse, it seems like. And even after Game 7 in Toronto, you did that live hit with him sitting on the bench. I was watching it live, and I was like, did this guy just win a Game 7? What is going on?
Turn up his mic level.
Completely right. Emotionless. And that's not a bad thing either. It's actually unbelievable.
It's Carey being Carey.
Yeah, and it's not that there's a lack of fire or competitiveness there, right? Like, you talk to his teammates, and behind the scenes, he is as competitive and driven as they come, right? Like, he knows when to show it and knows just when to keep things flatline. And part of it, too, he's been around this market long enough. He knows how much weight his words carry.
Yeah.
So for him, he really does pick a spot in that regard. And so I enjoy listening to him, even though it doesn't give you a whole lot from a media perspective. But it's just great to see his demeanor on display and just a great reflection of how he's been playing.
Final thought. Corey Perry signed in the offseason, started the season kind of, we wondered whether or not he was going to even be on the full-time roster all year long. Obviously, he has been. Eric Staal acquired prior to the trade deadline, and they've been on that line with Joel Armia throughout the postseason. But specifically, Perry and Staal, what have they brought to this group since arriving with the Habs?
Well, you go back, and it's been talked about a lot here, right? After Game 4 against the Maple Leafs and the night before Game 5, you know, there was a players' meeting at the hotel, and whether it was Eric Staal or Corey Perry, and I believe Shea Weber as well, you know, some veteran guys that spoke to the group and just hammered home the fact that, you know, these opportunities don't come around so often. We cannot, as frustrating as it's been to start this series, we cannot go quietly here. And so there you see the off-ice factor that they have there. And on ice, yeah, I mean, certainly Eric Staal, like, he comes in from Buffalo that first game, a great moment, scores the winner in overtime. The rest of the regular season, there wasn't a whole lot happening when he was out there in a positive sense. And so even when Game 1 rolled around against the Leafs, he was part of the top 12 forwards, and some people were questioning, are we really sure that this should be the guy in the lineup right now because of how little he showed down the stretch of the regular season? But now you're seeing why Dominic Ducharme has stuck with him. And I just think, I got to tell you guys, I feel so fortunate, A, to be just in this position, but also to work with a guy like Craig Simpson, who has been at that level, of course, during the height of the Oilers years and onwards from there at other points of his career. And he always talks about big on, you know, building off the previous shift, right? And so when you look at that third line last night, their first three shifts of the game, all entirely in the offensive zone, and on one of them, Corey Perry opens the scoring. So if you're Nick Suzuki or Cole Caulfield or Brendan Gallagher on the bench, you're seeing what they're doing and you're going, we got to follow that up, guys, right? Like the juices get flowing and the energy goes right to your legs from there. And so for, you know, the gray beards of the Montreal forwards group to be setting the tone like that in games like this, you can tell how it's a trickle-down effect and how it goes through the rest of the lines for them and why they're able to create some sustained zone time and large stretches where, you know, they have the puck a lot more often and given a guy like Carey Price a bit of a break. They've been massive both on the ice and off it here as the games mean a little bit more now.
Awesome stuff, Kyle. Have a good show tonight, hey?
Okay, thanks very much, guys. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
Kyle Bukauskas, Sportsnet. He is on the nationwide telecast tonight. Game 4, Montreal and Winnipeg, 6 o'clock face-off. We'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan on radio, Sportsnet, and CBC Coast to Coast on television. Sportsnet's Kyle Bukauskas joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. It was a really bad day 17 years ago, but some other stuff on this date in Flames history to help distract you. That's coming up next on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames history starts now.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
All right, all right. Let's rip the Band-Aid off right to get it started. June 7th, this date in Flames history, 17 years ago on this date.
They're over the line. Leopold is heading for the net. He won't get a chance to play it. It's in front of the goal. Heading forward. Knocked it away. This is over. The Tampa Bay Lightning have won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that was 17 years ago. Game 7, Cup Final. Ruslan Fedotenko, 2 goals. Craig Conroy, the only goal for Calgary. 2-1 final. Lightning win the series 4-3. Their first of their 2 Stanley Cups and their first ever Stanley Cup. After game 6 and after the double overtime Martin St. Louis goal, I didn't have a good feeling going into game 7. I just didn't. And, you know, knowing how hot that building was in game 6 and what a party that could have been. And then, you know, you go back to Tampa for game 7. I'll remember vividly how I felt after game 6. And I don't know about you, Will, and your recollection. I just did not have the greatest feeling as they went back to Tampa for game 7.
Well, I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, game 7, I know it finished 2-1. It was just never really close. It was just, you know, especially when Fedotenko got a second goal in the second period, you knew it was over. You know, Calgary wasn't coming back to score 3 goals, certainly not in, you know, a period and a half or less than a period and a half. So that was it was a tough kind of pill to swallow. They came back home with a chance to win and probably should have won that night. And it's tough to pick yourself off the mat and go do it, especially when you fly as far as Tampa Bay. And I mean, you're on the wrong end of the first couple of goals in that game. It just felt like it was never going to happen for them.
So that was 17 years ago, and I know this date will always be a painful reminder. Flames lose Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2004. A number of other notes on this date. I actually will give you a bonus one because I thought this was kind of cool. The kind of the first ever true event for the Flames franchise happened in 1972 yesterday, June 6th, 1972. Flames took form at the NHL Expansion Draft. Along with their expansion brothers, the New York Islanders, Flames selected 21 players from the 14 other NHL teams. First 2 picks were goalies, Phil Meyer from Montreal, Dan Bouchard from Boston. Meyer would play 211 games with the Flames. Bouchard would play just under 400. Flames also selected future Hall of Fame coach Pat Quinn. They took him from the Vancouver Canucks. That was June 6th, 1972. Back to June 7th, one trade on this date. On his 27th birthday, Flames sent forward Willie Plett and a 4th-round pick to the Minnesota North Stars in exchange for forward Steve Kristoff, defenseman Bill Nyrop, and a 2nd-round pick. So that was on this date in 1982. And some birthdays. As I mentioned, Willie Plett was traded on his birthday on this date in 82. He was born in Paraguay on this date in 1955. Originally a fifth-round pick of Atlanta in 1975, Plett would play 452 games with the Flames. So he turns 66. A couple of current members of the Flames celebrating birthdays today. Milan Lucic and Michael Stone. Lucic turning 33. He was born in Vancouver on this date in 1988. And Michael Stone turns 31. He was born on this date in 1990 in Winnipeg. And on that same date in 1990, former defenseman TJ Brody, born in Chatham, Ontario. Michael Stone, TJ Brody, birthday buddies. TJ Brody, of course, now a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So happy 31st to Brody and Stone. Happy 33rd to Milan Lucic. And happy 66th to Willie Plett, this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
What is happening with Jack Eichel in Buffalo, and what about the NHL in the Olympics? Are we any closer to participation in Beijing? That's up next with our Monday NHL Insider.
The Big Show talks hockey right now with NHL insider Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Lost your keys? Calgary Lock & Safe can rekey or recode your locks. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Hour two of the program is underway with NHL insider Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Friedge.
How you doing there, Pat?
I'm well, my friend. I gotta say, I was watching our coverage of Game 3 yesterday, and suit game on point. The color and the peak lapel, outstanding. I thought it was a unique but outstanding look. That was the first thing I wrote down, knowing you were coming on today.
I have to say, that's probably the favorite suit that Deb has ever given me. And I told Jeff that, when Jeff asked about it, Merrick, that I would have slept in it if I wasn't worried about what sleeping in it would do to the linen. It would probably crease it quite badly.
Well, it looked good. I was a big fan of it. Crisp pocket square. Everything was on point yesterday. Can you believe that we could be on the verge of Montreal already advancing to the Final Four? Like, have you wrapped your head around that yet?
Not really. Credit to them. No question about that. Like, it's not like this is unearned, Pat. They have been the better team in the series, and they deserve to be in the position that they're in. But that doesn't mean it's not shocking. I'm pretty stunned at what I've been watching. I think there's a couple of different reasons. Number one, I think the Canadians have found their identity. You have Daryl Sutter out there right now, and one of the things that Sutter has often talked about is through his career is, what's your identity and do you play to it? And Montreal has discovered an identity, and their identity is they lock it down, they slow down the game, they play disciplined, they're very tough to get through with their big D. They have really talented forwards, and if you make a mistake, they're going to bury their chances. That's what they do. And if things go badly, they've got someone at the end of the defense, the backbone of the D, and Carey Price is at the top of his game. And that's kind of their formula right now, and it's really working for them. It's amazing. I was talking about this last hour in Toronto. If you go back to just 2 weeks ago, they were down 3-1 to Toronto, and their fans were about to run them right out of town. And since then, they've won 6 games in a row. They look phenomenal. They play to what their strengths, and they've got Winnipeg on the ropes. It's really amazing if you think about how quickly it turned around.
Officially game time decision, Jeff Petrie for Game 4 on the Habs blue line. What are you hearing on that status, or is it pretty mum?
I mean, it's mum. There's an expectation he's going to play, right? I wonder if there's a chance the Canadians could go with 7D. Okay. But it sounds like he's going to play. Look, like, we all know that Shea Weber is basically without a thumb right now, right? So he's playing. So if one guy can play without a thumb, they're probably sitting in there and saying, hey, you think you can play without a pinky? Or it might be two fingers, but we'll see. Guys play hurt right now. There's no question about it. They push themselves to limits that they don't usually go to. And, you know, the only thing I was thinking is, would they just say, look, you'll be healthier if you wait a game? doesn't necessarily sound like that. So I expect at the very least he's going to tape his fingers. He's going to go and warm up, and we're going to see how everybody feels.
Should look, one of the things that we have talked about on the outside when looking at this Jets team, even after they swept Edmonton in round one, is talking about how deep that forward group is. And yep. Then they lose Scheifele, and it's like every other guy on this deep group of forwards looks like a completely different hockey player. Like, should the loss of one player affect a team? And I know how important Scheifele is. I'm not naive yep. to that, but should the loss of one player throw everything into the situation it has so much? That's the biggest question I'm asking about the Jets.
Well, it's not just one player. The short answer is no. Like, you have to compete and try to overcome, right? So the short answer is no, Pat, but don't forget it's more than one player here. Yes, it's Scheifele, who's your number one center, but they've also lost DeMelo.
Yep.
And they've also, and you know, Stastny came back, but basically he admitted this morning he spent the first half of the game yesterday trying to get back to speed, right? You know, there's a couple of things here. I don't know if you watched the pregame last night, but I had a conversation with one of the Blue Jackets who reached out to me and asked if, you know, is Dubois hurt? And I said, well, nothing would surprise me, but it's not like they're confirming anything right now, right? And he just said it's unfathomable to watch Dubois right now. He said that that's not the guy that they're used to seeing. And he said the only explanation for it is that, you know, he's hurt. And he just does not look like himself at all. There's been moments in these games when he's been pinned against the boards or slowed down. He can't do anything about it. So either he's completely mailing it in, which I find it very hard to believe, or there's something going on there. So I'm very curious to see about that. You know, I do think in game two in particular, some of the Winnipeg players were like, look, we're down three guys. We're down Scheifele. We're down Stastny. We're down DeMelo. I can't do anything stupid. I have to be on the ice. And I think it completely affected the way they played. I thought they lacked any kind of edge or emotion. But that's not an excuse for what happened last night. I just think that Montreal has owned this series. Montreal has controlled this series. And I don't know what happened to the Winnipeg team that lost game, that swept Edmonton. I have to think right now that both Edmonton and Toronto are looking at this series, Pat, and saying, oh, my God, like, this just makes our loss even worse.
Yep.
The fact that, you know, they're watching what's happening in this round.
Any other observations from the other three series going on right now?
Well, I mean, did anybody think that there was a chance that Colorado was going to be on the ropes? I mean, we all know how good Vegas is. You know, when Jared Bednar kind of crushed his team after their first playoff loss, I was thinking, man, tough crowd. You know, you go 6-0 and you lose once and your coach is all over you. But he clearly saw something. I'm in shock at how much Colorado is reeling in that series. You know, but it's been phenomenal to watch. It's just a great series. Boston Islanders has been a great series. I said that one was too close to call. I don't like betting against the Islanders, Pat, because I just think they play such a smart game all the time. They're very consistent. I have no idea. I think it's been a great series. I have no idea how to handicap that one. And, you know, the other one, you know, Tampa's just too good. You can't give them power plays. I really thought Carolina was going to speak out more after the Game 4 loss. I thought that they'd come out and just trash the officiating, which they didn't do. But you cannot give Tampa power plays. Their power play is obscenely good. They're obscenely good. It's dismantling a really good team in Carolina. It's tough to see the Hurricanes winning three in a row in that series.
Elliot Friedman's with us every Monday on the program. So we find out over the weekend, final four games will be played in Canada, and we will see teams crossing the border. What went into getting the federal government to sign off on that?
You know, I said to someone at the NHL that, you know, whoever you guys are hiring to do this, they're the only ones who can make the Canadian government do anything. You know, I remember when before the trade deadline, they said they were trying to get the quarantine dropped from 14 days to 7. And, you know, I said, there's no way you're going to get that to happen. And they kind of winked at me and they got it done. I said, you guys have the best lobbyists around. Like, nobody else can get these things done. You know, the one thing is, it's a pretty tough, if you read what they have to do, basically, when you come into Canada, and even the Canadian teams are part of this, and if you have a family in the city you play in, whether it's more likely Montreal or Winnipeg, you know, you have to stay in a hotel, and you can only go from the hotel to the rink. There's no public contact. It is restrictive. And when it's over, you have to do a quarantine. So it's not like this isn't a, it's not like this is a barrel of laughs. It's a pretty restrictive situation. But, you know, I guess they'll take it to have, you know, Montreal's obviously having fans home games now. You wonder if we go along here, they're going to get to a point where they let more people in. I guess you'll take the home ice advantage, but it's amazing how they get things done. And but it's still a very restrictive quarantine, Pat.
For sure. And it's funny you brought up the 2,500 fans. That's what I was going to ask you next. We just had last hour, we had Bukauskas on from Montreal setting up game four and indoor dining back open in Quebec. Do you see that being a possibility, the chance to maybe raise the number of fans at the Bell Center, assuming they close out against the Jets?
You know, everybody's kind of assuming that that's going to happen. But one thing I've learned about dealing with the governments when it comes to the hockey and, you know, just the various governments is the league and the teams are very afraid to say anything before it happens. They just, you know, like for example, we're doing headlines on Saturday night. I sent some notes to some of my contacts who would have known about the quarantine situation for the Final Four, and they all said, nope, nothing going on here. And then the next day it gets announced. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thanks a lot. And, you know, they kind of laugh about it, but they say, you know, governments move at their own pace, as we know, Pat. And you don't fool around with them, because if you piss them off, then they can just stop moving towards things and there's nothing really you can do about it. So, like, I just think that all these teams are kind of like, you know, we're not going to say anything until it's done. I think they're hopeful, but they're not going to say a word until it's done. And then they'll come out with the thank you tweets, how great it is that you're willing to do this. Like, you just can't upset these guys because they set the rules. And if you make them mad, they can just say nah, and they don't have to offer a reason. Yeah. So teams are really careful with this stuff.
Elliot Friedman's with us. Hockey Night in Canada. Sportsnet NHL Insider joins us every Monday. Looking outside of the postseason around the league, we find out last week Sabres will get the first overall pick. They win the NHL draft lottery on the 31, the Friday 31 Thoughts podcast. Not the latest one, but the one just before the weekend. You and Merrick discussed this a little bit. Where does this all leave the Jack Eichel situation?
Well, you know, Kevin Adams, the 12-week, the 12-week rest and recovery period ended last weekend. I think it was May 30th. And basically what happened was they agreed to talk about it, but Kevin Adams admitted last week when they won the lottery that, you know, the Sabres are still not comfortable with where Eichel wants to go here. So, and the other thing that is becoming a factor is that if Eichel wants to do that surgery and be on time to play, you know, we're getting close. So I think that now, you know, now that everybody knows where everyone's picking in the lottery, I think you're going to see some more business starting to get done here, Pat. And I think the Eichel stuff is going to ramp up. Like, I still think the most likely scenario is he gets traded. And maybe the next team that Eichel plays for kind of talks with him about what everybody wants to do. But, you know, the fact that Buffalo is still not comfortable with this and that, you know, we'll see how Eichel feels. But I just think Buffalo's overall message is they're gonna start again with Owen Power or whoever it is the number one pick this offseason.
So who
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
It's Monday, which means we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome back to The Big Show. My name is Will Nalton. Joining us right now is Chris Versteeg, former Calgary Flame and a two-time Stanley Cup champion. Our new guest in the afternoon on Mondays. And Steeger, let's jump right in. Montreal's leading the Winnipeg Jets 3-0. It's game four tonight. And everyone wants to know, how have they turned this thing around? Six straight wins. They haven't trailed at any point in those six games. Is there comparables to how they turned things around against Toronto and what they're doing in Winnipeg in these first three games?
Well, Alex Galchenyuk is how they turned things around. It seemed like the old teammate gave the Maybe the old teammate gave them some help on the way back. I think that turnover really sparked them. And kind of since that game, they've really got a little bit of mojo, swagger, everything going on, and it's all going in the right direction. What they did do, I believe, in that Toronto series, though, they were physical from game one, and I felt like it wore on throughout the series, especially against guys like Marners and Matthews. And by game seven, their physical dominance was there. Like, you could clearly see that they were hard to play against. They're not going to give you any freebies. Again, I don't think they're a great team. I think they're a good team. I said I wouldn't be again. I do stand by it. Is they could win this division, but I also don't think this division's good. So there's that. But at the end of the day, they are big. They're strong. They make it tough on the other team. It wore Toronto down. They came into Winnipeg. Obviously, they're rallying behind the situation at hand with Evans. They love him as a teammate. It was a dirty hit, and they're playing hard for him, and they're all on the same page. And they're really winning a game the way playoff games need to be won, and that's below the dots. Sustained ozone. I said early on in the playoffs against Toronto, they weren't doing that. It was too much trying to win on the power play and off the rush, and Montreal, they're just not built for the power play. You know, they have Caulfield who can score and Suzuki, but they're built to win and wear you down 5-on-5. And at the latter half of that Toronto series, they started to do it, and you can see – like, Winnipeg can't even get out of their zone half the time. They don't have the defensemen really to do it besides Morrissey. The odd time, Pionk can't defend like that. I'll always question why Hanel is not in the lineup as well, but they just can't get out of their zone clean, and Montreal's winning the game below the dots, and that's how you win playoff hockey.
Bizarre situation. I know Sportsnet kind of showed a couple of looks. It looked like he got his hand stuck in the camera hole in the corner, but Jeff Petrie, game-time decision tonight. We talk about Montreal, how they're hard to play against, and they also use that top four a lot. How big a potential loss could he be for the Habs?
Oh, he'd be a huge loss. I wouldn't say he's a loss in this series, because if they lose four straight, even without Petrie, I'd be very shocked, especially against a team like Winnipeg, a team where guys haven't stepped up. Maybe they win one or two games, but where Petrie will become a major loss is if they play Vegas or Colorado in the next round. You can clearly see that these teams and Tampa Bay are heads and above everyone else, and they've never faced a team like these guys all season. So what will happen when you have third and fourth lines that consistently score, you have second and third D pairings that can jump up in the rush? There's nothing like this in the Canadian division, and you're going to meet that at the next round. So losing Petrie, he's that guy. You have Weber that can play the top line, and if you can't have Weber out there, you can also have Petrie. So it's a huge loss as a tandem when you're looking in the future. Not so much at this moment, I don't believe, just because I feel like they can find a way through this series. But getting into the future series, losing him is massive.
Up 3-0, back-to-back, is it almost worth it kind of resting him, even if he is saying, like, I can go? Would you rest him?
I would rest him tonight. First, for sure, on the back-to-back, tell him just, you know, get it, whatever he's got, his ailment, make sure he gets it right, because – this round, yes, you want to put it to bed, and to win this game is always the hardest game to win. But at the end of the day, it's about winning the Stanley Cup, the long-term vision. You got to do short-term goals in order to get to the long-term vision. But right now, you got to think a little bit longer term, because having him healthy against Colorado or Vegas is much more important. And your team's got, again, back to the swagger and the good feeling. This is where you want your team to be, where it doesn't matter who's in the lineup, you're winning, right? And that's what the best teams do. You can lose these guys for a game or two, but that momentum can carry you through. So you got to rely a little bit on your depth and everyone you else have who's playing at a high level to get you through without him at the moment, but get him ready for the bigger series at hand.
He's Christopher Stege. He joins us every Monday here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan to talk all things Stanley Cup playoffs. You made reference to it earlier on in this interview. You know, Evans is down and the Habs are rallying around him. That was the big moment in this series. I know you've been on with the guys in the morning talking about it. I know you've had lots of thoughts if anybody follows you on Instagram. But just give us your synopsis of the Scheifele hit. Did you think four games was enough? And to me, it kind of looked like maybe the Department of Player Safety said, you know what, four games just because we don't really want you back in this series, not knowing it was going to be a 4 or 5 game series at the time. But just tell me, I guess, what you thought of that whole thing. And I know I looked it up this morning. You obviously weren't in Chicago anymore, but when Hossa took that hit from Rafi Torres, I just wonder in playoff series, a hit or a moment like that, how much can it swing things or turn things?
It can swing things a lot. And again, I thought the hit was really dirty. And if you say he was coming back to defend, you're crazy. And also, if you say that he couldn't have poked his stick out to try to poke check it, that's also crazy. I understand that there's momentum and there's certain things in the game. Sorry, my daughter. There's momentum in certain things in the game that you can't do. But at the end of the day, you could clearly see he could have put his stick out. He didn't. He didn't decide to do that. He ended up going through for – he ended up going for a big hit. That's what happens. When you're coming around the weak side, you're going to basically blow somebody up. But, yeah, I mean, and this is where I look at the whole situation in the entirety. Jake Evans didn't look once. And so that is – it is partially on Jake Evans in today's rules, right? And that's in today's rules. But guess what? From the age of 12 and up, I would have never put myself in that situation because I would have got blown up there every time. People from my generation and a little after me and a little before me, same thing. You'd never put yourself in this situation. Someone from Jake Evans' generation, they've never been in these situations that have hardened them, so they wouldn't know. So a young person watching would be like, what? They wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah.
But for us watching, we're like, oh, he's going to get, oh, you know. So that where it becomes, we need to evolve with the game, evolve with the times, take those hits out and not let them happen, because you have parents watching, you have kids watching too, and you want this game to continue to grow. And those are plays that are just easy to take out of the game. It doesn't take contact out of the game if you're allowing someone to railroad you on the weak side of the net. Or if, like, you know, look at Bennett's hit from behind or Radko Gudas. Like, though, if you take those plays out of the game and you think that that's taking contact out of the game, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. You're just taking away reckless plays that can really wreck someone's life or wreck someone's career. And if you don't understand that, then I don't understand how that's taking physicality out of the game, is taking recklessness out of the game. And it should not be there, reckless plays. Now, I know Scheifele, I still, again, believe he went into the situation recklessly. He went in there to hit. He didn't go in to take the puck. And a guy got hurt because of it. Yes, in today's rules, I don't know if it's a suspension even at all, actually, in today's rules, because there's so much gray area in the rule book, which that needs to change as well. So it is interesting. I think they got it right with four games, but again, I could also see it going with no games just because of the gray zone in the rule book.
We talked off the start of this about Montreal's turnaround and how they're playing better. Same thing can be said in Vegas. The first four periods were all Avalanche. And now the Golden Knights have really come on here. In game four, they played extremely well last night with a 5-1 victory. That series is tied at 2. I think going in, everybody expected a 7-game series, kind of an all-out battle between probably two of the best teams in the league, if not the two best. What have you seen from Vegas? How have they been able to have this much success against the Avalanche?
That hometown crowd. It's number one. I played my last ever game in Vegas, and it was regular season with the Flames. And this is true. Like, when you're in warmups there, the bass is so loud. Like, I saw a guy's beer shake off the ledge. You know what I mean? And then I felt like the pucks, they were like vibrating on the ice. It was mind blowing how crazy it was in there. And then you get into the game, and they just really feed off the energy. That team's not designed to just play skill hockey. They're designed to play straight ahead, hard, strong, tough. So what they did from game two on is really they were energized. The first game, I mean, they flew in, you're playing Mile High City. Air is really a thing in Colorado. They don't play well. So game two happens, they play better. And game three, they get home, they get that extra juice from the crowd. And look at that. Like, they just contest every situation. It's never going to be an easy shot on net. It's never going to be an easy lane to the net. Everything's going to be hard. And again, the top Colorado line hasn't showed up to where they can in the last two games. So it's going to be a hard series, but if they're going to win, they're going to need that MacKinnon line to drive it. And they're, you know, Saad scored the other day, but they're going to have to be the best line again, just like they were in game one and two.
How tough can that be in a playoff series when, you know, for MacKinnon, like, all you've had is dominance to start the playoffs, and then you're hitting kind of a bit of a wall? How tough can that be to kind of fight through that a little bit?
Well, I'm sure it's pretty tough, but you also got to, you know, think about you're in a tough building, you're being checked by Pietrangelo's D pairing, and then you get out there and you're against Theodore or McNabb. So you're really, you know, McNabb coming back shores up their blue line a lot. It makes them a lot harder to play against because, again, you go back to when we talk about Montreal, you have two D pairings that now can play. Well, Vegas, you have three D pairings that could technically play against the top line. So makes it a little bit harder. That's why home matchups are going to be key, getting them out against certain lines at certain times. Even though they're all relatively good in their own end on Vegas, that's the good thing about Vegas is they're very deep. They can all play against that line. But for McKinnon, you know, he's just got to reach down deep and find that level that he was at prior to the last two games. And I'm sure he can get right back there.
Are they missing Kadri right now?
I thought so yesterday. They're missing a little bit of that jam, and that's how Vegas plays. They're all jam, right? Not as much peanut butter, and then Vegas or in Colorado's a little more peanut butter, not as much jam. So, at the end of the day, you need jam to win, right? And that's what you need, and you're missing that piece of Kadri right now. I think, again, they rallied a little bit behind the fact that they lost him. Some guys wanted to step up. And then now you come back down to earth a little bit, and that's where you start to realize how big of a piece Kadri is. And now it's on Kadri to come back in and win this thing. This is his third time going through this. The first two, he wasn't so lucky to come back. So there's always a little thing I look at called destiny. And I feel like this is a bit of a destiny for Kadri to come in and show why you should hold on to him and not get rid of him like Toronto did.
Just two more with Christopher Stieg. Every Monday he joins us to talk all things Stanley Cup playoffs. The first one, pivotal game 5, Bruins and Islanders tonight. Thought on those two groups and what we've seen in the first 4 games, kind of like Montreal. The Islanders, maybe not a great team, but man, do they play hard and they make it really tough on the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, that's a really good series. Islanders, they're not going to take many chances. You can clearly see it with the way they even play Matt Barzal. I was like, forever, I'm like, can you just let this guy go? Let him play his game, give him a little more leash. And when he gets more ice time, he gets more leash and he gets with better players. Like, why is he playing with Komarov the whole time? Like, he clearly wants to play with Palmieri. He gets out there with Palmieri. He sets him up. Nothing against Komarov, but top players want to play with certain players, and you put him out there with a certain player, and he scores. It's I don't get it. I understand their logic at times behind it. I don't get it right now. But if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, you need Matt Barzal going, and he's the game changer in this series for them. Just like Pasternak, he misses that chance. He's the game changer for Boston. So those are your two guys. You need them both going. This is a great series, super close. I love how Boston plays. They play a little more up pace. They get their D joining the rush. And I think they will win in 7 games. I have Boston in 7 games. But it's a close series, and it's going to be hard. Again, you fight for every situation on the ice in this series. You can see that there's no free passes. And all the top guys are coming to play. That's the other difference. Every single top guy, Bailey, Nelson, all these guys, they're showing up every game. Even when they're not on the score sheet, they're competing. And same with Boston. That's why it's just highly contested hockey all over the ice.
Connor, one for you. Just kind of, I was trying to rack your brain and trying to let you go back in the memory vault. I don't know if you ever had an 8-goal period in the playoffs, but Carolina and Tampa on Saturday, that was chaos. And obviously the Hurricanes on the wrong end, they lose 6-4. They're down in that series now 3-1, which is unfortunate for them because they probably deserve to be tied at 2. Do you remember a period like that in terms of chaos? And what have you liked about the Hurricanes and Lightning series?
Yeah, it's I think the thing I realize is Tampa Bay is just too good. Maybe that's it. I know it could be 2-2 very easily. Some saves here and there for Carolina. I think that's a bit of their issue right now. But at the end of the day, Tampa Bay is so timely. They can create so much. They're deep. They're tough. They play the right way. They beat you in the ozone and on the rush and on the PP. So they don't just beat you with sustained ozone. They can beat you in 3 elements of the game. Like most teams can only beat you in 1 or 2 ways. They can do everything. And that's what cup teams need to do. I don't really remember any crazy goal. Like I remember there was periods where we had 3, 4, 5, 6 goals maybe in a period. But the craziest period sequence I've ever been involved in is Game 5, series is tied 2-2. We're playing Nashville in round 1. Marian Hossa takes a major with 1.5 minutes left, and now we're shorthanded. Patrick Kane scores with like 30 seconds left shorthanded to tie the game. And I've never heard a building that loud in my life. It was going nuts in there. And we still had to kill off another 3.5 minutes of a power play going into overtime. We killed that off, and the building was like electric. It's like crazy. And then Marian Hossa came right out of the box directly to the back door and got like a bouncing shot, and he tapped it into the open net. it was, again, it's not really a period, but it was just a sequence in my brain that I don't think I've, like, after winning the cup in certain games like that, that's probably the craziest I've ever felt after a game, just with the electricity and the atmosphere, the turn of events. And we ended up winning, you know, that series 2 days later, but it could have been a lot different.
Finally, just because I was looking it up today, 2 days. So on Wednesday is the 11th. It's been 11 years since Patrick Kane scored in overtime in Philadelphia in game six. I've always loved talking to people on that team. Were you on the bench? When did you realize you were a cup winner?
Yeah, I just came off the ice, and I remember where I was exhausted, came off, and I remember I put my head down, and all of a sudden you see, and the puck went to Kaner, and I remember looking up, and he did the shimmy shake, and he went around, and I was just kind of like on the bench, you know, keeled over, and he shot the puck, and I heard a whoomp, like it was like a smack, and I'm like, what the heck? So I looked in the netting above. I thought it hit Leighton's stick and went up, and I remember Troy Brower's like, where's the puck? Where's the puck? And I was like, I think it's in the netting. And then all of a sudden he came skating by and everyone's like, it's in the net. I'm like, it's in the net. Holy, you know? And then all of a sudden I was like, please be in the net. I came on the ice and I saw everyone throwing their stuff off. So I'm like, I don't know if it's in the net, but I threw my stuff off. And I remember in my head, I'm like, if this isn't a goal, this is going to be the worst thing of all time. And then we lose this game and we lose this series. But then Kane was sure it was in the net. And I still remember vividly looking down the ice and the one linesman grabbed the puck out of the net. I remember that. And that's when we started going crazy, because also at the same time, our video coach beamed into the coaching staff that it was a good goal. But I did see the ref, and we still haven't found that puck till this day. But I remember him grabbing it. And there's a picture of him leaving the net with it in his net, in his hand. But we remember him grabbing it. And yeah, the celebration was on. But that moment on the bench, there was probably a second and a half, 2 seconds roughly, where, again, I thought the puck was in the netting.
Unreal. Crazy to think it was 11 years ago. I still remember it, and would not have wanted to be a commentator in that moment. That's for darn sure.
Doc wants it back, eh?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, for sure. Chris, good stuff, man. As always, enjoy the rest of your day. What are they working on, the clappers behind you there, or what's the deal?
Yeah, there's a hockey rink in behind me, a little thing we set up because – the kids just smashed the walls all day, and that's what they were doing. Yeah. So if you heard shooting and shooting Lego blocks, I apologize.
It's all good. Appreciate it, man. Take care.
Yep. Have a good one.
Christopher Stieg of Sportsnet. He joins us every single Monday on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, you can call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. And I can guarantee Atlas can't wait to welcome you back for some in-person dining. Well, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus away from the postseason. Pat touched on it briefly with Elliot Friedman. Potentially, are there more guys to pry out of Buffalo, and who can the Calgary Flames potentially target if it's not Jack Eichel? We'll talk about that and more when we come back and wrap up the 3 o'clock hour on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
A lot of talk on Jack Eichel. 12 weeks, rest and recovery. Wants to have surgery. Team doesn't want him to have surgery. And it's becoming more and more clear that perhaps Jack Eichel has played his final game as a Buffalo Saber. Welcome back to The Big Show. Will Nault, Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon along with you. We're teeing you up, leading you right into puck drop. Game 4 coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. Winnipeg Jets looking to stay alive, keep their season alive as they trail the Montreal Canadiens 3-0. And we'll have Game 4 from the Bell Center for you at 6 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960. Of course, you can watch it as well on Sportsnet and CBC on television. Pat, a lot of focus has been on Jack Eichel, and now as that 12-week rest and recovery period has come to an end, it's still very clear, as Elliot Friedman told you earlier this hour, Kevin Adams and the Sabres still not big fans of maybe the direction Jack Eichel wants to go in terms of surgery and recovery, and it does appear like we are heading towards a divorce, and now the reports are coming out. Darren Dreger, Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnston, you name the insider, they've got the report on it. The Buffalo Sabres are fielding calls on not only Jack Eichel, but other players in Buffalo. And for the longest time, we've talked about a Jack Eichel fit in Calgary. I've not you know, I've had trouble seeing it in terms of the fit and the pieces needed to potentially pull that deal off. But, you know, now the conversation is, okay, well, might be Jack Eichel is the top prize, but who else could potentially be on their way out in Buffalo? Elliot Friedman speaking with you earlier this hour. The first name that popped out of his mouth was Sam Reinhart, who's 25 years old. He'll turn 26 next November. He's an RFA with arbitration rights this summer. Pretty safe to say, Pat, he'd be the next guy on the wish list for a lot of teams. And, you know, I know there's been a lot of people that have been on their text line, on Twitter, you know, that are diehard Flame fans that have been asking, okay, well, what about Sam Reinhart? What about away from the big fish? Could Sam Reinhart be a fit in Calgary? And we've talked a lot about Sean Monahan and the second line center role. Obviously, the fit, I think it makes sense for the Flames, but where are you at on a Sam Reinhart deal, and what do you make of a potential fit in Calgary?
Well, it'd be interesting to see, because I think the easy way to go, knowing that Reinhart needs a new contract, he's coming off another pretty good season. This guy's turned into a pretty good hockey player, and you know, we're talking about a guy that has been starting to flirt with point per game. He's a good two-way center iceman.
He'd be the first Reinhart to play for Calgary, too, so that's good.
I believe that would make him number three, correct? After Paul and then Max and now Sam. Like, if they're serious about moving Sean Monahan, the two guys are pretty, like, Monahan's turning 27 in October, and as you mentioned, Reinhart's move is turning 26 in November. So they're basically a year apart. If you could make that deal, you'd probably have to add to it because Reinhart's younger, because of Monahan's salary, what's left on it, all that type of stuff. You'd probably have to add to it. Mm-hmm. If you could make that deal, if you're Calgary, I think it'd be interesting, especially if they're not going to be blowing it up, especially if they're not going to be going in a drastically different direction, but are looking to shake up the core. I think the framework of a Monahan for Reinhart deal would be interesting. I think you'd have to add. Maybe you don't agree, but if I'm Buffalo, I don't know if I'm making that trade straight up. I still feel like Calgary might need to add on the other side because of Monahan's injury issues of late, because of the way Reinhart is trending, and because Reinhart's younger. I feel like that might not be a straight up one for one.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo's benefiting from having a little bit of term on Monahan, whereas you mentioned Reinhart does need a new deal. He's got arbitration rights. We know how much teams want to avoid arbitration, kind of at an all-costs benefit from their side of it, because nobody likes to go into a room and essentially tell each other why they suck. So I look at it and say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But then I also think about what Elliot just told you in earlier this hour, and that's, if you're Buffalo, like, does it make a lot of sense? And I know that's why you're saying probably adding, but, you know, I don't know if Monahan would be a guy that they would want in a trade for Sam Reinhart. It's probably more of a Dylan Dubé in a deal like that. And so, you know, that's where I think you got to look at it, because from a Flames standpoint, and if you're a fan of the Flames, yeah, it's easy to say, oh, trade Monahan and replace him with Reinhart. That'll be really good for this team, and it will.
But the Sabres be into that?
But the Sabres, yeah. I don't see any part of them wanting that. They're a team that wants to get younger. And again, all due respect to Sean Monahan, I'm not sure he's the guy that I'm, you know, pulling in because I want him to be a huge mentor for my younger players.
Yeah, you're getting older in that regard. If
right,
you're going down that road, and that's why I don't know if there'd necessarily be a great fit with the Flames and Reinhart, because
we've talked about the perceived league-wide value of Monahan too, right?
And that's why even if the Sabres were interested in him, they would I think the Flames would have to add in that regard.
Agreed.
I'm curious as to what Buffalo... Okay, so Reinhart's 25, soon to be 26. I'm curious what else they'd be interested in moving, because I'm sure they'd love to divest from Skinner, but good luck with how much time is left there.
No chance there. So Kyle Okposo, too old, no chance there, I don't think.
Still 2 years
The other guy that I wonder, Pat, and I only wonder this because of the age, very similar to Reinhart, and the couple of good seasons he's had, I wonder if Victor Olofsson is a guy they might want to move out of there too. And obviously, you know, ideally you'd like to keep him, but if you're Buffalo and you really are trying to turn a new leaf and trying to get younger, you know, he's not super old, obviously, but he'll be 26 next month. He's got 1 year left. He'll be an RFA after that. So, you know, from a team trading for an Olofsson, that's a very attractive piece at a $3 million salary. And we've talked about how hard it's going to be to move money this offseason. I do wonder about Olofsson as well.
Well, so if you're the Sabres and you're looking to move guys out, I'm curious as to who would actually be untouchable. Like, who do they? So if they're gonna the number one overall pick, untouchable, I would suggest Dalene would have to be in that mix as well. As we're still talking about him only being a few years removed from being number
middle
one
middle stats probably there too.
And I wonder about him because he's still 22, seemed to come on in the second half of the season. Like, I'd be, if I'm another team, I'd be super interested in buying low on that guy, but I don't know if the Sabres would be interested.
Tage Dylan Thompson, Cousins is untouchable.
Cousins, former first round pick. Tage Thompson's a guy that has really started to give you some glimpses of what he might be with that size and that skill, but he has yet to put it all together.
If he was 26, 27, I'd probably suggest that they're probably going to move on from him, but he's only 23, so that I find hard to believe. He's also signed for two more years at a really, really respectable cap hit, and let's not forget, you know, if they trade a bunch of guys, you still need players that are making seven figures. So, yeah, the other big question, and Elliot made reference to this as well with you, he's been in trade rumors for so long. Rasmus Ristolainen would be on that list too. And I do wonder, just because of the cap hit, Pat, and obviously similar term, he's a couple of years older than Ristolainen, but Colin Miller would be a guy that I'd look at and wonder if they move him out too.
Both guys are right shots, so at the very least, you've got something coveted in that regard. Ristolainen, if you could get him on a buy-low situation, if you're able to, I'm not even talking necessarily for the Flames, so I don't love that fit here, but if you're another team and you're willing to take on that cap hit a little bit, and help them with most of that $5.4 million AAV, I think you could buy low on a guy like Ristolainen. And they are, as you mentioned, Toronto. They're thin on that right side. They could easily make that work if they could make it work salary-wise. Going back to Reinhart and the Flames, if the money, because you're right, I think that your point is bang on about, okay, well, if the Sabres are looking to rebuild, why would they look to go a year older with Monahan in a trade for Reinhart? If they're not willing to do that, and I understand why they wouldn't be, I just don't know if giving up a Dubé or giving up a first in a prospect for a 25-year-old Reinhart, as good as I think the player is, I don't know if that makes a lot of sense for the Flames, personally, the way I look at it.
Yeah, I'm in the same way. I think you'd have to really evaluate it. I think, you know, the reason why I bring up a guy like Dubé's name, again, this is just me and pure speculation, but we've talked a lot about Sutter and potential influences he may or may not have. And we've said this too, Pat, like, let's not forget that there's every coach and GM talk about moves together. It's not a complete GM makes the moves and here's your team, coach, go coach them. No, they're very much in sync and in you know, daily conversations about this type of stuff. I do wonder some of the comments he's made. Like, I wonder if Dubé is a guy that they potentially dangle out there as trade bait for other teams. And maybe it's not a Reinhart deal. Maybe it's elsewhere. But we heard some of the comments that Sutter has made about Dylan Dubé and obviously the couple of healthy scratches, the benchings in certain games. You know, he's a player that obviously can grow, and Daryl would know that. So it's not a for sure thing that he's looking to move him out. But that's the reason I bring up his name. And again, I think from a Buffalo perspective, that would be a trade that you could probably begin the framework of it in terms of a deal. So I'm with you though, and I've said this, and again, if I wasn't on team complete rebuild, I probably would have better or different thoughts about a first round pick and a prospect for a guy like Reinhart. I don't see the Flames as being in a position where that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and even if they're not going to completely rebuild, I don't think that giving up, like, they regardless of whether they want to stay competitive or not, to stay competitive for the next number of years, they got to restock the cupboards. And by trading away, I would put Dylan Dubé, you know, untouchable in a Jack Eichel trade or something like that. No, but looking to move on from Dubé, knowing that, you know, you've got a contract negotiation and this guy, I think, has taken some significant strides over the last couple of years. That's not a guy that I'm eager to be packaging up unless it's a blockbuster deal. But, you know, if you're talking about first-round picks or prospects in the organization, their cupboards are pretty bare because most of their young players have graduated to the NHL, and we're talking about Pelche, Zeri, and it's kind of thin. And that's no knock on Phillips and Rizicka and Godden and guys like that, but are those guys top-end NHL prospects? Probably not right now. I think they could be NHLers in a certain role, but not.
But is their ceiling top six? Probably not.
Exactly. And that's why trading away guys and potential ability to bring in other top prospects. And the Flames are going to draft 12th. You can get a good player this year. And I'm not saying that they won't, but I would not be looking and eager to trade away that first round pick this year. I just don't know how it makes a ton of sense.
And quickly before the break, just sticking with Buffalo, I don't know if Gerard Gallant, an impressive run at the World Championships, but after paying Ralph Krueger a reported $4 million a year on that term, I don't know. And we're talking about Buffalo looking to get younger. I don't know if a Gerard Gallant makes sense for the Sabres. And I really like what Elliot said. I think it's going to be in New York. It just won't be with the Sabres. It might be with the Rangers, Pat.
Yeah, and that
we know the Rangers have been looking for an experienced bench ball.
Well, exactly. And that one makes a whole lot more sense from a fit standpoint, only because you know, that team has aspirations clearly. Specifically, their owner has aspirations clearly of being more than a rebuilding team at this point. They went away from Davidson and Gorton and then fired Quinn as well because they want to be higher up the standings. They want to be a team that's in the postseason next year. Well, with that collection of talent and it's growing, they're still moving in a nice direction with some of the young players too. Who knows? Like, sure does feel like they're the leading candidate to land Jack Eichel as well. Gerard Gallant's a guy that is proven to get the most out of teams and to elevate teams, and his stock has never been higher coming off the world. So I could see if Seattle hasn't done it, even though they're still rumored in a name that could be out there, I think New York makes the most sense for him too, and I think it'd be a good fit. I really do.
Yeah, I've said this before. If Ron Francis wanted Gallant, he would have already pounced. Exactly. I fully believe that, and I still... As you know, I don't know if you've talked to Elliot about this yet at all in your previous visits, Pat, but man, there's this part of me that just continues to wonder about the Joel Quenneville rumors and the Seattle Kraken. Yeah. We'll see if it happens. Obviously very tight with Francis, and he was not hired by the current brain trust in Florida, so you could see that, but I also find it really hard to believe that the Panthers are going to willingly let a three-time Stanley Cup winning coach just walk away from their franchise. So we'll see how it goes, but there you go. There's an update on Gerard Gallant. And the Buffalo Sabres are going to be one of the busiest teams in the NHL's offseason. Jack Eichel's the big prize, but what about Sam Reinhart and some of the others? We just broke some of that down, and we'll be curious to watch what they do as we lead into the draft and get more buzz on some of these off-season stories, Patrick.
Will Nault, Pat Steinberg, big show underway. We're into hour number three around the corner from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at IconicEC. Logan Gordon up next. It is a busy Monday. The biggest stories on headlines 3 minutes away. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to 14 grand. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
We're underway in hour three. It is Steinberg, it is Nault, and now Logan Gordon has the biggest stories of the day. It's time for Headlines, Logo.
Gentlemen, happy Monday. A doubleheader of Stanley Cup playoff action tonight is where we kick off. Headlines will start in the East. New York, Boston coming up in about half an hour's time. Game 5 from Boston as this series is tied at 2 games apiece. The Bruins set to make a lineup change. Jake DeBrusk going to be a healthy scratch. Carson Kuhlman coming in. Head coach Bruce Cassidy spoke yesterday about his third line's ineffectiveness in Game 4. This was yesterday, and you could see the writing on the wall if you were DeBrusk.
Third line didn't generate much last night. Well, didn't generate anything, to be honest with you. They've had better games. Obviously, a breakdown in the last goal. Our winger dove down. We should have had more patience. A lot of them get to the middle of the ice, and it kind of snowballed from there where guys were a little late because we didn't do our job first. So that part of it hurt us. But at the end of the day, we'll look at it for tomorrow, see what we can do on the third line. Kuhlman's played a little bit. Freddie hasn't played in a long time. Those are the guys who are with us the most, Steve. So, but again, you got left wingers having to go to the right side unless it's cool. So we'll consider it and we'll go from there.
So no Jake DeBrusk. They'll go with Carson Kuhlman. They'll also be without Brandon Carlo for the second straight game. And interesting, Pat, we're dealing with some veteran coaches in this one on both sides of the equation. Barry Trotz, yesterday speaking to the media, was asked about Patrice Bergeron being up for the Selke Trophy and just didn't have a comment about how Bergeron's been taking faceoffs this series.
Well, I think, Bergie's been a really good faceoff guy. one of the best. And I think Pager and guys like Zajac, Brock, they all study what he does. And yeah, the biggest thing with Berge and the really linesman can control this. He doesn't like to get a stick down, so he's got to come to a stop. He's you know, and then you have a fair fight. And so, you know, he's a veteran guy who knows how to cheat on the faceoffs. And I'm relying on our very capable officiating crew and linesmen to make sure that the cheating doesn't go on, because he's good at it. And all the veteran guys are. He's not the only one, trust me. But he's very good and he's very capable. And he's been a top centerman and a faceoff guy for a long time.
Pat, you know, always talk about how they're trying to talk to the refs or, you know, maybe making a comment for player safety to hear. Barry Trotz making his thoughts known to the linesmen yesterday ahead of tonight's Game 5 matchup against the Bruins. By the way, Bergeron did talk about it today. He said it was a veteran move by Barry Trotz. He expected him to stick up for his team and try to get the linesmen on his side.
Hey, I mean, just game within the game. And you had Peter DeBoer. Soft call in overtime, but I don't blame the officials. The way Colorado was diving and the way that they were embellishing all night, it's tough on them. Some of the men, Rod Brind'Amour has taken some massive shots at the officiating so far this year. Yeah, there's been some mind games, some game within the game being played by some of the coaches and players so far. That was expert level stuff from Barry Trotz, though. Hey, give the Islanders a ton of credit, and that crowd at Nassau was bonkers. I think it really helped them in Game 4 specifically. It was awesome in Game 3 too. The way the Islanders play, the way the Bruins play, it's just not going to be a lot of goals. And the Islanders are fully comfortable playing that type of hockey, Will, and they have shown that through four games so far. Now a best of three.
Yeah, a lot of comparisons, I think, between the Islanders and Montreal in terms of maybe not the best teams left, but man, can they frustrate their opponents. And when they're playing with the lead, they're almost impossible to beat. And to do that to a team like Boston, it's been impressive to watch. Obviously, what they did in round one against Pittsburgh was impressive in its own right. So give them a ton of credit. They're battling hard, and they're not making this easy for anybody they play. And I think we knew that going in, that the Islanders were going to be a tough out. And they're proving that right now. And man, you know, Buffalo or Boston was one of those teams that I said in the end of the regular season into the playoffs, they were playing some of the best hockey in the league and they were going to be tough to beat in the playoffs. And Barry Trotz has drawn up a nice game plan here and has put them in a real good position heading into a very pivotal Game 5 tonight. Can't wait to watch it. This series has actually been a lot of fun. And I know that people roll their eyes and get mad at the Islanders and say they're super boring. Cough, Pat. But you know what? This series has been a lot of fun, and we'll see what Game 5 brings tonight.
They are boring.
This series has been fun.
It's actually been pretty good. That's why I say it. I give them a lot of credit.
Teams that win Game 5 after a 2-2 series tie win 78.8% of the time when it comes to NHL playoff series. We'll see if that trend continues. Game time coming up in about 20 minutes. You can catch this one on Sportsnet 1. We shift to the North Division where all of a sudden we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens with a chance to be their first team onto round number 3 of the Stanley Cup playoffs after a victory last night against the Jets. They head into an elimination game tonight. Nick Ehlers talking to the media today said he's been in a 3-0 series before playing overseas, but he says they're excited. There's a chance at history, gentlemen.
In my last year in Switzerland, actually, we were down 3-0 in games and came back, made it a game seven and lost that one. So you know, anything's possible in hockey. That's why we love this sport. So we're gonna have to work for it, obviously, but we're excited.
Very excited.
He was in 03 in
Switzerland,
and
they lost.
So
anything can happen. I guess, good on Nick Ehlers.
He's trying.
He's trying on the ice. The Jets gonna need more from him and some of their other players tonight if they want to extend this one. Of course, on the Montreal side of things, we're still waiting to see the status of Jeff Petrie ahead of tonight's game. He left with an upper body injury. Replacements possibly Xavier Ouellette or Alexander Romanoff. Dominique Ducharme says there's lots to go into the decision as to who will take over for Petrie if he's not able to go tonight.
Well, we'll look at the, and we're looking at every situation, whether it's a PK, power play options, pairings, duos, depending on situation. So, we're thinking about it and we'll see.
Game time decision for Petrie. Will, the last time the Habs went to the finals was back in our conference finals, I guess. I was going to say Eastern Conference, but I don't really know that it works that way this year. 2014, when they lost to the New York Rangers in six games.
Dustin,
they have a chance.
Tokarski.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's right. There was Tokarski there. Jets have been outscored 11-4 in this series. Will, Habs with a chance to punch their ticket to round number three tonight.
Gotta be honest, guys, I'd be stunned if this thing gets to a game five. It just has looked so one-sided, and Winnipeg just looks like they have nothing going to what we talked about earlier, Pat, when you go through a sweep in round one in your favor and then nothing goes your way in round two. I do think it is really tough to fight through that. They look completely different to the team we saw in round one, and I just can't see how your confidence is high going into a game four tonight if you're Winnipeg. Now, that being said, they do say that, again, cliche, but the fourth game is the hardest to win. It's not going to be easy for Montreal. Jeff Petrie is certainly a guy that will watch his status. I know I've talked about it a couple of times, asked Chris Versteeg. I even asked Bukakis earlier when we had him on, up 3-0 and how dominant they've looked. Like, would you rest Jeff Petrie in a back-to-back? And I think I might consider it, but again, you don't want to give any life for the Jets, so that's a tough decision to make. What a bizarre and just complete freak injury that is for Petrie. Appeared to get his finger stuck in the camera hole in the corner on the glass. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Really unfortunate for him. And I do think Christopher Stieg made mention of it in our interview last hour. I think as this playoff goes on, Jeff Petrie's health will be probably a big loss for Montreal. But, tonight, maybe not as big of an impact. We'll see what it brings. His puck drop is just under 2 hours away. But, yeah, I think Winnipeg's in tough here, Pat. I really do.
They just look out of gas. They really do. They look so out of sorts. The Dylan DeMello loss, I keep talking about Scheifele, but you brought it up a couple hours ago. Losing DeMello has really disrupted what has been a really good pairing with him and Josh Morrissey, and I think that has led to a lot of the running around that we've seen from the Jets defensively after being so dialed in that regard against McDavid and co. against Edmonton. It looks like a completely different group in their own zone. But for a group that was so heralded for how deep they were at forward going into the playoffs, and for that being one of the big reasons why people talked about them beating Edmonton four straight, you lose one guy. And I get it. He's their most important, and he is their best guy. But all of a sudden, Scheifele goes down, and Blake Wheeler and Andrew Kopp and Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois and all these guys look completely average. And that's just inexcusable. Even if it's your most important guy and your number one center, you got to do something about it. You got to rally around it. And instead, it's gone the other way. The only guy that I have not seen a huge drop-off from, Logo, is Ehlers, who we heard from. He's still dangerous. He's still creating. I think he's really gotten rid of that playoff monkey on his back that said he can't get it done when it matters the most. Now I'm wondering about, okay, where is Blake? You're the cap. Blake Wheeler, step up. Let's do something here. Kyle Connor, it seems like the last two times Shifley's gone down in a playoff series, in the bubble against Calgary, and now in this series against Montreal, Kyle Connor looks like he is receded, and save for a couple of chances that have kind of been gifted to him, I haven't seen much from him either. So it's been disappointing. If I'm a Jets fan, yeah, the Shifley thing sucks. Maybe you think he got jobbed. Maybe you're like where all three of us are, where you believe that suspension was completely warranted. Regardless, you should have expected your team to respond better with how perceived deep they are. And instead, now they're down 0-3 to the number four seed in the North.
And remember, Pat, Ehlers has experience being down 3-0 in Switzerland.
Kind of like threw in, we lost. But anything can happen.
And we lost.
In my last year in Switzerland, actually, we were down 3-0 in games and came back, made it game seven and lost out.
Hmm. Good thing they're excited, though. That'll be good. 6 o'clock pucks are up right here. Sportsnet 960 Defend. You can also watch this one on Sportsnet West and CBC. It's an off day for the Toronto Blue Jays today, guys, but we still got some off-the-field news from them today. They're extending their stay in Buffalo and increasing capacity later this month. They'll stay in Buffalo till at least July 21st. The team had previously committed to playing in Buffalo only through July 4th, which was when the final home game before the All-Star break would be. Now, with the Canadian and U.S. border still closed, they are going to extend that till at least July 21st. And now, starting on the 24th of this month, fans will be allowed at 80% capacity at Salen Field. Pat, we've had a couple of these discussions as the Jays have extended their stay in Buffalo previously and then moved from Dunedin a few weeks back. But now, with the announcement over the weekend that the NHL teams were set to get an exemption when it comes to cross-border travel, a number of baseball insiders have wondered if the same fate awaits the Blue Jays. We'll have to wait till at least later on in July to see if that's the case.
Well, Ontario has kind of come out with their roadmap to reopening, and so they're getting closer to getting back to where they want to be. They're reopening patios later on this week, so on and so forth. If you're the Blue Jays, I do wonder. And so there's a lot of headache that goes into it. You don't know, Will, if you're going to get fans back at any point at Rogers Center. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. That's very much up in the air. Whereas here you are at Salen Field and you're getting 80% capacity. Now, I'm not saying they're going to sell out, but you've got the opportunity to have some fans and some revenue in Buffalo, whereas you don't know what that's going to look like in Toronto. I wonder from a business standpoint how much the Blue Jays are like, well, maybe we'll stay in Buffalo, get some revenue, get some fans in here until you know for sure whether or not you're going to have that option at Rogers Center in Toronto. That popped into my head when I read that news earlier today.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, Pat. I don't know enough. I'm not smart enough to know it all, but I would imagine the finances of having your team in Buffalo probably washes that out in terms of revenue you're getting, because I don't imagine they're making players pay for accommodations and hotels and all of that stuff. So I do wonder how much it's costing the team to have the operation in Buffalo, and that's why they're so desperate to get back to Toronto. But yeah, I think in the meantime, you're happy with any revenue coming in, and 80% is better than zero, and so it's a nice boost to have for sure. And I think as a result, they're going to stay in Buffalo as long as they can, because again, even if you're allowed back in Toronto, for example, but yet you're not having any fans back, I do wonder from a financial standpoint if it does make sense to still be in Buffalo and be getting a little bit of revenue on the side. So, rambling, but I do wonder about that. Secondly, I'm not getting into politics, but just open the border already. It's getting kind of ridiculous at this point.
And we'll finish off with some football news on headlines today, gentlemen. A couple of re-signings in college football and in the NFL when it comes to coaches. We'll start in college, where Nick Saban is continuing his career with Alabama for 3 more years. The school announced the 3-year extension for their head coach, which takes the 69-year-old Saban through the 2028 season. I'm not exactly sure why they had to hammer this out now, but they did. His current base salary, $8.425 million, will increase annually throughout the deal. He joined the Crimson Tide back in 2007 and has led the team to 6 national titles. Of course, one of the winningest coaches in college football. And just because I wanted to throw up in my mouth when I tell Pat about this, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have agreed to a revised contract for head coach Bruce Arians that includes a pay raise and a new contract for general manager Jason Light, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Of course, they led them to the Super Bowl last season. Arians' second year with the team has an 18-14 regular season record during his time in Tampa Bay. Pat, barf.
Super Bowl. Just quickly on Saban. There's been this thought from some, Will, that maybe Saban tries to go back to the NFL to try and rectify that part of his legacy. That has to close the door. Well, that's what I've always said.
Like, he's in contract for 7 more years.
He doesn't care.
For somebody who has been wondering that has to close the door, even on the most ardent. Well, he's got to go back. Like, he cares. All the guy's done is won national championships at the college football level, but 77, I don't think he's going back to the NFL after that.
No, and as you said in the release, they've got, you know, family roots in Tuscaloosa. They call Tuscaloosa home. Alabama's their home. Quite frankly, I don't think he even cares one iota what anybody believes about his NFL time. And did it work in Miami? No, it was a disaster, but he doesn't care.
Gentlemen, that's your Monday edition of Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to $14,000. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
So the rest of the NHL is catching on to this Andrew Mangiapane fellow, and guess what? He's eligible for a contract extension in just over 6 weeks. I'll double down, tell you why the Flames have to prioritize getting him locked up long-term. Next on the Big Show, Sports. That 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to the Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
All right, first off, congratulations to Team Canada. That was a cool run they went on to win gold at the World Championship in Latvia. Fun way to finish it off with the overtime win over Finland yesterday. And congratulations to Andrew Mangiapane, World Championship gold medalist, tournament MVP. Was cool to see what he did in Latvia as well. And now gives us a wide open door to dive into what I think is a pretty juicy discussion. Welcome back to the program. Steinberg, Nault, Logo, along with you on your Monday Big Show. And here's where I am. Guys, I think the Flames need to prioritize signing Mangiapane to a long-term deal this summer. They have other things they need to prioritize too, but near the top of that list, I believe signing Mangiapane long-term needs to be right there. He's eligible for an extension on July 28th. I was of the opinion last offseason that long-term was the way to go, but also understanding they had a cap crunch after signing Markstrom and Tanev, they were a little bit more hampered, so they go 2 years, 2.425 per. I see no point in going short once again. Even taking the Worlds out of the equation, for me, my question is, what more does this guy have to show to say that he's not worth being locked up as part of this team's core? Right now, I'm signing him to 4, 5, 6 years. This is one of the most, if not the most, effective player 5-on-5 this team has. I've got some numbers I'll throw at you in a little bit, but Will, you were not super thrilled with that idea in the offseason when we were going through it, and for good reason. I mean, there was plenty on the other side that suggested, well, still young, and there's still lots to be proven, so on and so forth. Where are you now that come July 28th, he's eligible to re-sign again? Where are you on the concept of signing him to a long-term deal?
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that it makes sense now. I think the bridge deal made sense at the time. He put up another good season. You've got one more year under the belt. The only thing I disagree with, Pat, is this team's got a lot of problems and holes. I wouldn't say it's a priority for me, but I certainly would be looking into it. And I think as the year goes on next season, say, you know, similar timing, I would think, in terms of other guys that have signed deals. You look at Rasmus Anderson, for example. He signed it in January of that 19-20 season. I could see something like that for Mangiapane. I'm not going to go out there and say, no, I need to get this guy signed by July 28th. That's my priority. It's got to be the top. I'm not the same part as you. But, yeah, I think there's no question that his age, what he's proven to you the last couple of seasons, and to your point, I think he is the most effective, at least right now, 5-on-5 player on this team. Outside of maybe Lindholm at certain points. Yeah, I would sign him long-term. I think this team's got a lot of holes that I wouldn't be going out of my way to make that a priority. Now, that being said, by August, maybe all your other stuff is done and you look into it, but I'm not making it a priority, no. But yes, I would be signing him long-term, and I'd probably be looking at it, you know, again, similar timing to Rasmus Anderson. Not that you need more evidence, to your point, but, you know, you get another half season of the belt of Mangiapane. And maybe in January, you can come closer on what that term actually looks like, what that deal looks like on a year-by-year basis. I do think there's, and from a player standpoint, I think if you're Mangiapane, to your point, maybe you don't feel you need to prove anything more, but if you can put up another half season of great hockey, it's probably benefiting your camp as well. So I don't see it happening this summer, but I do think the team will sign him long-term, because I'm with you. I think at this point it makes sense.
From a just from a logistics standpoint, with him being 25 years old, you've got 2 years until he would be eligible for unrestricted free agency. So his current deal leads him up to the end of next season, or this coming season, when he will still be RFA. But that would be his last year of RFA eligibility. So any years that you're signing to an extension, let me see if I got that right. No, sorry. Two more years. So you'll have one more year after that of RFA eligibility, which means anything more than a year on his next deal, you're now buying UFA years. And as such, you're going to have to pay that premium for each UFA year that you buy. The reason why I do it this summer is so you can get the cost certainty, so you can get it in right now, because I think he's just going to continue to up his stock going into next year, and to be able to have an idea as to what your cap's going to look like even before this season starts, and to not let him have that opportunity to up it. That's why if I'm the Flames, I'd push hard for it. But to your point, if you're him, you know, maybe you would say, well, let's wait a little bit. I'm not willing to lock in at that number because I want to see if I can up my stock a little bit more.
And realistically, how half more season for the Flames, is that going to burn you? No, it's not going to burn you.
So what does, and who knows? I mean, if he's on pace for 30,
you're still getting cost certainty, whether you do it now or you do it in January.
He was one of Calgary's two best players, 5-on-5, second in possession this year, third in high dangers this year, and did it playing against high-end competition. The guys who were ahead of him in high danger ratio, Levo and Ryan, didn't play the same type of competition. Kachuk, the only player ahead of him, 5-on-5 possession. And nobody on this team does more with his minutes scoring-wise than Andrew Mangiapane has the last number of seasons. This year, goals per 60 at 5-on-5, number one. Points per 60 at 5-on-5, number one. Logo, this guy is the most efficient player on the team, has been for three and a half years in a row when it comes to converting his 5-on-5 minutes into points. So what does a long-term deal look like for Andrew Mangiapane? I'm thinking, like, I'm willing to go 5-6 years with this guy, and I think that's going to be a pretty hefty AAV, knowing what he has been able to do the last couple of years. Hell, this last deal, despite him being like 300% higher than his last deal, he was still the best bargain on the team. So what's a reasonable dollar figure? What's a reasonable length to be looking at when it comes to Mangiapane?
I think it's always difficult sometimes to have these conversations about guessing prices and buying free agent years, especially when you start talking about the flat cap world that we live in. But I think we're all probably on the same page that a substantial raise is coming Andrew's way. I wouldn't, just to throw a number in my head, I was sitting there thinking about like 4 times 4.5 per year was something that I immediately thought about. I don't know if that gets it done from Mange's side, but that was the first thought that came into my head. Still an RFA when his current deal comes up.
Like this one coming up right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was any 4 to 6 is where I was thinking, Will. And I think any year you go past
in a flat cap, I'm not signing him to a $6 million deal.
No, hey, how come?
What's his ceiling, Pat? As good as he is, as effective as he is, 5-on-5, I completely agree. But is he a 70-point guy? Is he a 65-point guy? I think that's very hard to tell right now. I think if he had a full season on a top line, you know, I think we might have a better idea. He still very much flipped all over the lineup last season. So, and maybe I'm alone on this, but I just don't know what his ceiling is, guys. I have a really hard time sitting here and being confident one way or the other that he's going to be a 30-goal guy and a 60-point guy, or he's going to be more of a, you know, 20 and 20 for 40 to 45 points a year. I don't know what that is. And for me, I just don't know if I see him as a $6 million guy. I just, all due respect to him and as effective as he is, I think Logan was more in the sweet spot, at least for me. I think he's more of a, you know, $4.5 million guy, but that's just me.
It's kind of where I was thinking years, by the way, I was talking okay. Six. Yeah. And
yeah, there's no way I'm going $6 million AAV.
No, that's not where I would. 4.5 to 5 is kind of where I'd be.
That's
as well.
Like, that's more than double what he's making now in a flat cap.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? I like, that's it. A fair enough raise to go with a couple of years of unrestricted free agency.
I think is to Will's question, Logs, I think the ceiling for Mangiapane is somewhere in the, I think 25 to 30 perennially is absolutely warranted. I think you can talk about him being a 60-point guy in this league. That's kind of where I see the ceiling. Do I see him being a 90-point guy? Maybe not. But do I think that 30 is well within the realm of possibility, especially if his power play time gets a little bit of a boost as time goes along? I think that's very
Yeah, doable. I think if there's one thing he's proven is that he can score goals. I think there's no question about it. And we've said that for a little while, Pat. I think he's got a really good shot. He's got great offensive instincts. You don't put up 100 points back-to-back years in the OHL and have 50 goals in the OHL by accident. Yeah, he can score goals. There's no question about it. So I don't think you're crazy to suggest that 60 is the ceiling, but is he a 60 point guy for, you know, five straight years? Yeah, maybe not.
And the other thing on that, Logan, is that, you know, now at 25 years old, just turned 25 last couple months ago, he's probably entering that conversation where there's still a little progression left, but we're starting to move into as a forward 25 to 28 kind of are what you are territory. So he was on pace for about 26 goals this season, most of those at 5-on-5. I think he can continue and even up that pace a little bit over 82 with a more defined top six role. But I don't know if we're talking about this guy going from, you know, being on pace to 26 to next thing you know he's at 40. But to take some small steps in the next couple of years, I think that the very least you could reasonably see that.
Yeah, and I think you're talking, too, about a guy here that's – I think this year, being the shortened year, was the first year where we really saw him in consistently a top-six role and a consistent power play shift being given to him. So I think that's probably where the last little bit of progression comes as far as his numbers go, having that consistent ice time in those situations, because I think before that he's probably more of a top-nine player. I think now he's probably, especially on the Flames – established himself as that top six sort of guy going forward. And yeah, I think the 50 to 60 is something to expect from him. And I just think there's the all around aspect of his game, the way he skates, the way he's hard on pucks, all that sort of stuff, I think are good things that bring in the value for him. So if I was the Flames, I'd be interested in it. I'd be curious what it looks like when you start talking about values and what guys go for in a flat cap. And we know if Brad Schilling is the guy to do it, he's been pretty good when it comes to his RFA signings too.
I $4.5 million times four. If you could get that, I would do it if I'm the Flames. To boost it to six, you're probably talking, and I don't know. I don't know if this gets it done with his agent's Rich Winter. I don't know if it gets it done six times five. I don't know. I don't know if 6 years at $30 million, it's, you know, in some ways, I think it's, I've talked to a couple of agents before. It's like for guys, it's sometimes tough to turn down, hey, here's $30 million. But at the same time, you might think there's more earning potential there. It's why it is tough to target exactly what it might be. But I think it's worth, at the very least this offseason, having that conversation. Now, that doesn't mean, to your point, Will, that doesn't mean there aren't other priorities that would go ahead of it, whether it be shaking up the core via trade, determining what you're going to do with Johnny Gaudreau and what that next contract looks like. If there is a next contract, there's plenty of other things that enter the conversation, too. Gaudreau, Tkachuk, Dubé, Valimaki, they're all also eligible for contract extensions come July 28th as well.
Yeah, like in my opinion, the top priority for the Flames right now is figuring out what Johnny Gaudreau wants and what that looks like, because I don't know the exact dates with the calendar being kind of a little bit out of whack here, Pat, but that clause he has in his contract for the final year,
same
of
date,
a five-team trade list, you're running out of time to make a decision there. And, you know, as much as Johnny has professed his love for Calgary in public, and which I believe him, and we've talked about that, Pat, I think, and you'll hear this, whether it's, you know, former players talking on multiple podcasts these days, or even current players in laid back, you know, off-season conversations where they look back over their career. Maybe it's the older guys or whatnot. You know, players never really have much bad to say about teams or coaches that give them a chance or give them a shot. And that's what the Flames have done for Gaudreau. And so he's even mentioned that. And so I don't think anything he said about his desire or his love for Calgary to stay, I don't think any of that is false. But at the end of the day, he's still a guy who's 1 year away from free agency. You only probably get one crack at that in your life, especially at Gaudreau's age, where he can probably cash in one more time. So if you're the Flames, and as much as Gaudreau probably loves and respects the organization, he's still looking out for numero one. And if the Flames aren't going to give him a deal that he feels he could potentially get next summer on the open market, I don't know if that's, you know, is that one you want to go into the season with playing ball with, you know, Gaudreau essentially controlling everything with a five-team list and a guy that's on an expiring deal. So that would be the top of my priority list. But yeah, I think, you know, long-term for Mangiapane right now makes a ton of sense. But like, there's no other argument that I can listen to right now that tells me that the number one priority for this team is what is Johnny Gaudreau's future.
Well, and I think that you need to, at the very least, have a pretty good idea in the next. So July 28th is 6 weeks plus two days. So that's 44 days is what you've got between now and when he'd be eligible. I think you have to, at the very least, get it. Whether you put pen to paper by between, you know, whether you have an agreement leading up to that, you have to, at the very least, have an idea. There's going to be a gap. You're always trying to find middle ground, but do you feel like that is actually realistically manageable and that you can bridge that gap if you're the Flames? And if you think that there is truly a desire to get this done and it feels like there is a lot of positive momentum to getting that done, then sure, go past July 28th, let that no trade clause kick in. You're confident that it gets done. If you're not, And to your point, well, if you're way too far apart and it just doesn't feel like, as much as Johnny wants to stay here, and I take him at face value, 100% I do, if it just does not feel like financially you're going to be able to get to a better spot, then I think you absolutely have to go down that same idea as to, what was it? It was Hall for Subban, I believe, had a similar, not Hall for Subban, Hall for Larson and Subban for Weber. I think they both had similar reasoning behind the timing of their deals right after the draft, before free agency kicked in. Now, you might have to be in that situation and be exploring something at the draft if you're the Calgary Flames. That's going to be a really interesting next 6 weeks or so, a little bit less than that, say 4.5, 5 weeks between now and when the Flames might have to be making that decision. This summer, Sportsnet 960 The Fan encouraging everyone to use Skip the Depot to recycle their bottles or cans, all in the name of one of our favorite causes. Download the app or go directly to skipthedepot.com, create an account, and if you use the promo code Rogers 2021, 100% of the proceeds from your empties are going to our friends at the Mustard Seed. Then you leave your bag outside, somebody else will come pick it up. The folks from Skip the Depot will come pick it up. So you've got an opportunity to hassle-free recycle your empties and make sure that 100% of the proceeds go to our friends at the Mustard Seed. Go to our website, sportsnet.ca/960, for more details on the initiative. As we continue along on a Monday Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.